This is Matt.
This is Paul.
This is Jacob.
From Mad Madlings Ice Cream Social, you're listening to Seven Land Hand.
That feeling is magic gathering under your balls.
Ooh. It's Seven Land Hand.
Brought to you by Good Games Cannington. Hey, I'm a planeswalker. Kneel down before me and start the lamentations of your women. What's that? Yeah, my name's Jace Bellend. No, I'd really rather not have to give you all of my lunch money. Do you remember when I was a mind sculptor? Hey, for your information, I wear this hoodie to stop the skid marks from rubbing up against the back of my head when I get wedgied. Anyway, look at that interesting thing over there. It's Seven Land Hand.
Good distraction.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
That's distraction.
I'm a mind sculptor.
I'm a mind sculptor.
Anyway, with me today, eager to hoist the underpants of any and all unsuspecting planeswalkers, dipping the schoolgirl's hair in the inkwell, it's Rob Grimsey.
How are we doing, guys?
Good, man.
Doing well, Rob.
Responsible for Harley Quinn's haircut. I'm playing Batman, so... One side red, one side black. Inkwell. Anyway, waiting outside the headmaster's office, it's Aaron Graham.
Hello.
That's that voice. We recognize him.
Bullying people.
And letting the air out of the bicycle tires down by the bike racks, it's Kian DeVries Turnell.
I love messing with people's bicycles.
Right. Yeah.
So, he's known, well known for it in these hip parts.
Yeah, we're all, yeah. Gentlemen, how are we? What's been happening?
Doing very well.
It's been
a little while since I've been on a podcast.
Graced the airwaves.
All the airwaves that there are.
With your beautiful face.
Good to have you back on the air.
Beautiful face.
On the air, they say.
Frequencies, let's name them.
I thought we were the most beautiful podcast on the air.
We are, and we'll stick by that until someone proves otherwise.
We haven't been recently. Matt McHale's been on here a hell of a lot.
He's got a slug on his face on his Facebook profile picture.
A slug
on his face.
Is that true?
Yeah. Like, he found it. Oh no, it's a snail. It's like a cute little snail.
It's a slug.
But like, how big? Cute. Are we talking like an inch?
It's like a tiny.
How big
like
is Matt's slug?
Oh, half an inch.
Half an inch.
It's not even worth it.
Big shell though. Huge shell. So what's this school bully theme we've kicked off with anyway? Why am I crapping on about that?
So Magic Origins in the style of the great Sam Raimi Spider-Man films and every other superhero origin story before it, Magic Origins. They're telling the origin stories of all these planeswalkers that we've been following for the last few sets. Nyssa is
we were
like
so confused for all those years, weren't we?
Yeah, where did they come from? Everyone was just asking so many questions.
We can't play with these cards until we know.
Liliana accidentally kills her brother with a black magic thing.
I used to have 18 brothers.
And you accidentally killed?
I have one now. There's 17.
But how many of those did you accidentally bring back to life as a zombie?
I haven't got those skills.
Yeah. That's why you're not a planeswalker, David.
After the 17th one, you're like, it still didn't work.
Still didn't work.
Only one shot left.
I've been wearing this black garter for weeks now. Still can't do it.
Nyssa gets transported to Lorwyn, where she becomes a racist.
Yeah.
That's the synopsis. That's the synopsis of that story.
What? I haven't read that one.
She's like a talented, like, bring the ground to life, an animist on Zendikar, and then she sees Emrakul when she goes on some vision quest, and she's like, and it fucks her up so much that she planeswalks to Lorwyn, when she hangs out with these elves, and she's like, yeah, I'm going to be part of these guys, I'm going to go hunt whatever they're hunting, and they're hunting, like, goblins, and the elves just hate goblins on that one, so they're just ultra racist, and they're like, fuck these goblins, let's murder all of them, and this is like, so she becomes a racist.
Okay.
There you go. Magic racist.
I'd like to believe magic cards are a reflection of our society, so Nyssa holding it up for us in the racial department.
Chandra is a little kid, and then her parents will get murdered by, like, an evil corporation, so she explodes with fire, becomes a planeswalker.
Very angry.
Well, no. She explodes with fire because the evil corporation pin a town burning down on her and are going to kill her. And she's like, no!
So we've done Liliana, Chandra, Nyssa.
Kithian, he's like a ragtag guy on the streets of Theros. And he goes around and then he fulfills a quest for Heliod. He slays Erebos's titan in a field. And then Erebos comes up. He's like, whoa, what'd you do that for? And so Kithian tries to kill Erebos, the god of the dead. Mm. And so Erebos kills all of his friends.
I fulfilled
the
quest.
That's the end of that story.
I fulfilled a quest for helium once. My wife sent me out for party balloons for the kids.
For helium once? The helium quest.
Is that close?
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. It's exactly the same, actually.
And then Jace. What happened with Jace?
And then Jace... Jace seems to be magic's proxy for
everyone.
Who they expect the average magic player to be. Oh, so right. He's a 14-year-old kid. He's going to school. Yeah. He's different to everyone. He doesn't know why. He loves wearing hoodies. And then he goes up to the mage ring just to think about the world. And then three kids like start bullying him and like want to push him off the mage ring.
They bully his ring.
They bully his ring. His ring.
Bully
all,
him right out of the
all
ring.
Night long.
Oh, no.
And he's very upset about
yeah.
it. And then he reaches into one of the kids' minds.
Oh, dear.
And he's like, whoa, you're a freak, Bellerin.
Yeah. And just destroys
it's
him.
It's like exactly what you expect from like some lame high school movie. And then he goes and studies under a sphinx for a while, and then he mind battles him on top of a thing that's not
so
really
are
important.
We going to see these scenes played out in the movie?
Oh, the movie
is that
forgot. Oh, yeah. No. I sure hope not, because
it'll be because Jace's bully.
Yeah. Yeah. You know it's going to be. It's going to be
Jace's bully, played by Aaron Graham.
The first...
Fuck you, Jace.
You haven't been as good since Matt's covered up.
Yeah.
I must push you.
This is for memory adept.
Oh. The living Gilpack.
Oh, the living Gilpack. That's a better one to kiss
the
shit out of him for.
That's the worst one.
So, yeah, movies. Anyone seen Ant-Man yet? Ant-Man? We done Ant-Man?
Not yet, no, Aaron. Aaron Graham.
I've seen it.
Paul Rudd.
Aaron Graham, Ant-Man. Yeah. Paul Rudd, yeah, it was good. What did you guys think of it?
Well, I went to see it with the family. So I was sitting next to a 10-year-old lad, Travis, who was loving every minute of it.
Yep.
It came out of there saying that's the greatest movie I've ever seen. So I was kind of swung because I was sitting next to someone who just over enjoyed it. So I enjoyed the experience, but I've become detached from whether I know anything about movies anymore.
Yeah, I read George R. R. Martin, who wrote Game of Thrones, said
yes.
It's the best Marvel movie that they've ever
really?
Released. Because he loves the comic book feel that it gives. He says it's very comic feeling, like there's witty one-liners and there's like action and then there's like a over-the-top villain and, you know, plot holes, and he said he just loved it, but those are all the things that made
then,
me not like
oh,
it very
I like
much.
Paul Rudd was good at saying what the audience
was
thinking
yeah. mm-hmm.
in like every movie that's mm-hmm. ever come out. He was good at that,
yeah.
you know, like
slap at the base.
You know when he was when not spoilers. I don't know. He's facing off against Falcon,
sure, yeah.
and he goes, "Who are you?" And he just whips up the mask and he just says whatever his real name is. He goes, "I'm Scott.
Hello.
Just wanting to you know get inside the building and do some stuff." That was.
Can you let me please? And he's like, "No,
no, I don't think so." Yeah.
There's actually a funny trivia thing about that. So, Paul Rudd, is that his name?
Mm.
I don't actually
that's
know
that's what
the
we're calling
name.
Him tonight, anyway.
he has a son, and his son found out that he was going to be playing a superhero.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, are you going to be Iron Man?" And then he said, "No, I'm going to be Ant-Man." And the kid was like, "That sounds really lame, Dad."
Well, that's what I've been thinking ever since they announced it, because I didn't know anything about Ant-Man until this happened.
I didn't do any research, went in, and his powers are he can become quite small, and he can control ants with his mind.
No, but even beyond that, it's not like I didn't know the stories. I hadn't even heard of Ant-Man.
You've never even heard of him.
I hadn't even heard of Ant-Man.
I'd heard of him just because there was hype like 3 years ago when they announced it, and they're like, "Whoa, how are they going to pull this off?"
That's when I heard about it.
Yeah.
It was very good, actually.
I liked it. I liked the ride, but I did not like many of the stupid things in it. And people were like, "Oh, what's the main actor's name? Michael Douglas?
Yeah,
playing
the old guy."
Everyone's like, "Oh, it was so great." I was like, "He was stupid. He was stupid." He's like, "How can you control the ants?" He's like, "I control them with my brain waves here."
And he had an earpiece. Who knows
like
what earpieces
aid.
Do? Yeah,
he just looked
like
a crazy old man.
I just loved that guy because he was like, "This is not actually a keychain," and then a tank just falls out of the building.
Lots of silly things. Very like it is a very, very, very good comic book movie. But maybe
I don't think I'm not looking forward to seeing it again, but that doesn't need to say that, you know, when it's out DVD or on Netflix, I'll go, "Oh, I'll give Ant-Man another
one."
Yeah,
I'll watch it one more time in my life, I think.
Yeah,
so,
that's probably about the right number.
So, Aaron, when the Hispanic comedic guy is, like, telling his stories...
Yeah. Oh, that was good.
All I could
really
think
fun.
Of was
Starlight
Ice. Kean stories.
Kean stories, yeah. That's exactly what it's like.
That Starlight
Cinema was
great.
Just go to
set
and don't go anywhere, and he finishes and you're like, "Oh, yeah? Okay. Good. Was that all? Was that all you were going to say?"
Yeah. Rob Wayne in this one heavily with the guy who hasn't seen Iron Man.
I mean, it sounds fantastic. I mean, who do they have someone amazing portraying the ant? That's what I want to see. Like, which actress is rocking the sexy ant here? Who's the sexy ant love interest?
That's in the sequel. It's Evangeline Lilly from Lost.
Doesn't look as hot as she did as an elf, like in The Hobbit.
I thought she looked hotter in this. I've got a thing for black bobs.
Me too. But
no.
Oh, okay. That's amazing.
It's like a Disney movie. Little Pixar, all the ants are Pixar ants.
What is it? Cross species love story? That would be amazing.
That would be real.
First cross species love scene on movie. It could have been. Groundbreaking, guys.
Could you scratch my leg? No, the other one. No, the other one.
No, the other one.
No, the other one. No, the other one. We'll get there.
Oh wait, it's my thorax. Touch my thorax, baby.
You got the best thorax.
If you hurt me, my 10 million children will come after you.
That's right. Come at you.
What have you been geeking up with, Rob? The last.
I've just been. Wrapping it up with Magic Origins, actually.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Well, you're in the right place, Sunshine, because this pod's all about that. As soon as we've finished with this nonsense, you know.
Yeah, I didn't cover the Ant-Man side, but Magic Origins draft, man.
You didn't get the memo. We all went out and watched. We all went together.
I don't even know what Magic Origins is.
We just watched
Ant-Man 5 times.
we all went out and saw Ant-Man on the 7-land-hand budget, and we thought you just didn't get the memo. Yeah. That's what the budget is. Yeah. We all pay for our own tickets.
On the budget. The non-existent budget. Go pay for your own ticket.
Hey, man, but it sounds great.
It sounds great.
No one's listened to this bit. On the budget. We're good. Yeah, right? That's good. Kian, what have you been up to?
Well, I have a story about that, actually.
About what
hashtag
you've been doing.
Kian stories.
Oh, no. We could be here for a while.
This one has a beginning, middle, and end, though. So.
You know this story.
Yeah, so Aaron already knows, and it's actually related to the podcast.
Okay.
So, a couple of months ago, I signed up for online dating.
Yeah?
That's how this story started.
That's it. Oh, wow, this is... Whoa, slow down. This is probably the most interesting... Already, this is the best interesting opening to any story we've ever told on the podcast.
Yeah, Kian's not really told us much about his dating life on the...
All right.
He told us some stories about them in Singapore, though. Maybe we won't go into that today.
Let's not do that. Let's hear the story, Kian. So let's hear it.
We're intrigued. You have us.
Anyway, so I'm setting up my profile, right? And I'm
what's your username?
I think it was like Ben 007 something.
What? Bend over.
No, Ben. Shut up,
Ben.
Ben. It's my middle name.
Oh.
Bendover's your middle name.
Shut up, Dave. Anyway,
sorry.
And one of the things I mentioned that I did is I appeared on a podcast, Seven Land Hand, you know, right. And I actually put the podcast name as well.
I was wondering why
we
were getting...
How much did that... Because you know how we have the advertising budget. How much did we pay to feature in Kian's online dating profile?
Oh, to plug him and to get
to get likes towards us. Because millions of viewers on his profile.
Yeah. I mean, how much did we pay? Thousands of women
percentage,
out there.
Percentage-wise, it might not have been that high.
It might not have been... Oh, yeah. Oh, wow, so we got an early
right
before the big popularity spike.
Yeah, well, the popularity spike happened after Kian launched in there with the Bendover 007 account.
Bendover 007 account. Yeah. Also on 7landhand.com.
And we immediately responded with, you know, maybe nothing.
You should just rename it Kian7landhand.com and we'll just, like, pay you a few dollars to properly flog it.
And your profile picture could just be the 7-Land Hand logo.
Oh, yeah, done. Yeah.
We could take the selfie
like
right here.
Yeah.
So you said it was that name. So why isn't it anymore? Or are we going to get to that?
Let me finish the story. The story has an end.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that was my profile. And a certain someone looked at my profile and was like, this is interesting. And she listened to the podcast.
Oh, no. Which podcast? Cause
which episode?
There's peaks and troughs.
The most recent Magic one. So I believe it was the Origin Spoiler Show with Grimsy and Dave.
Oh, that would have been a good one then.
That was top notch. Yeah. Oh, no, that was when we were all sick.
Yeah, we were all sick and tired, so it might have been one of the least interesting podcasts.
Oh, wow. These guys sound phlegmy.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the phlegmy guys.
So she was intrigued enough to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, and from that, she picked out who I was.
Well, on what grounds?
I actually don't know the answer to that question. I should ask her.
Well, you do introduce all of them at the start of the show.
Oh, yes.
This is true.
She recognized him by his name.
Ooh, stealthy.
What?
Yeah.
His name is Ben 007. You're like, this week on 7 Land Hand, Ben 007.
Ben 007.
007 Land Hand. All right.
Is that what you call it when you lend someone cards and they bend them?
I am 100% going to call you Ben 007.
Land hand. By the way.
Oh, gods.
So she's on board. She's listening to the podcast.
Loving yes. it. Loving every minute.
So she's liking your...
No, she doesn't. She had no idea what we were talking about.
That's a tough hour and a half for her.
I know. Yeah. Fuck. And that's apparently she's going to listen to this one as well, which is like, okay.
Welcome
that's
welcome
why I was
aboard.
About you telling the story.
Yeah, a little bit.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello.
Thank you. Welcome aboard.
Wait, what's so Ben 007, what's her username?
Maybe you shouldn't tell us. No, because I'm going to go look at
her. Yeah, we're not going to go about that.
I'm not going to tell you that.
Okay. I think it was something related to dinosaurs.
She's embarrassed. Something related.
I love dinosaurs. That's not where
okay, let's
this.
Move on. Let's move on. Okay. Okay. We got it.
Have you already given her a Hyper Magic Nerd badge, or do we need to pack one up for her tonight?
No. Can I get a Hyper Magic Nerd badge and I will give it
you
to
can,
her?
You can, and cool. then she'll forgive you for whatever is about to happen.
I know, right? Anyway, so I believe I was chilling with Rob, Isaac, and Ash, friends of mine, when this next step happened.
Ash the Web Webster.
Yeah.
Oh, we know him.
So she added me on Facebook.
Yes.
And I was like, this attractive woman who lives in Perth, who I have no mutual friends with, has added me on Facebook.
Rockingham's not really Perth.
Same difference. Perth metro area, or whatever.
Stop dragging it out, Ken. Come on, get to the point.
I was like, okay, a random woman who I have no friends with has added me. She's attractive.
Yeah.
I must just ignore this. Like, it's obviously a scam or something. Like,
those messages. Your instincts. Yeah. Just ignore hot women. That's what I do as well.
It's like one of those messages on, like, Skype or whatever. Because, you know, it's like,
it's like, hey, baby, how are you today? Want to transfer me $40 for a Skype show?
No, yeah. I don't.
A quick interlude is that, like a hot girl at the gym said I looked like a superhero while I was working out, which is the best compliment
what?
I've had ever.
What superhero? What?
I don't know. She didn't get to that. But just my response to that is that I've been terrified of her ever since. I don't make eye contact or speak directly to her.
Aww.
But anyway, Kian, go ahead. It seems like you've been braver than I have.
Yes. So she then sent
look
me a bunch of messages.
Glowing
and
with
anyone
pride.
Who's familiar with Facebook knows if they're not your friends, they go into your other messages. So this has all happened. I haven't realized, and I've
when completely you friend any it. Girl on Facebook, they go through your entire history of anything you've ever done on Facebook. When you friend a guy on Facebook, they just read whatever comes next.
Yeah,
that's the
yeah,
difference.
That's, fair. That's yeah. true. And then she, like a week later, sent me a message on the dating site,
right?
Which I then responded to, and then we met up. And I figured out all of this like 2 or 3 dates in. So this all like
well,
came
she
out.
She started quoting your past to you. Yeah. Like, oh, this is like that time back in April when you like took your dog for a walk in that beautiful rose garden. Yeah. Oh, how did I know about that? Oh.
Well, but I didn't add her on Facebook, right?
Is this? Hang on, did Kian get stalked? Kian, I can see him from
the
here.
End of the story, they said quite a few dates in. So
oh, okay.
So I didn't figure this out till a few dates in.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. But anyway. The long and the short of it is I signed up to online dating.
Yes.
The podcast succeeded in getting someone to add me.
Yeah.
And that person is now someone I'm dating.
Yeah. Seven hand dating well relationships 101. That's pretty much what we've been doing it for, I think, guys. Isn't it?
Yeah. I should pitch this when I go out the week. I should bring cards. Be like, ladies, listen to this podcast. I'm
hey,
on
ladies.
It.
Here we go. This is me.
Yeah, I'm single. Hit me up. Yeah.
Just open up the jacket. There's like 20 Half Magic Nerd badges there. And you'll go, like, oh, you're the guy.
Oh,
yeah.
It's you.
Yeah.
One of these could be yours, baby. Play your cards right.
Man, play your cards right.
Just don't mulligan to 5.
Oh, damn. No, don't
Rob with his drop the mic, play your cards right moment.
Yeah.
Wow, this is great because I thought we'd lost our beacon of light for Seven Land Hand with Riley and his voice. Because Riley got not picked up, he got noticed by another gamer.
Oh, yeah.
He got, I recognize your voice. Aren't you the guy of Seven? Well, you're one of the guys of Seven Land
Hand.
Oh,
yeah.
He's like, yeah, that's right. But
that's
in that hobbit thing that
that's
he did.
That's me. Oh, however he talked. Like a hobbit.
Yeah, like a hobbit. No, it's him. Oh, man.
That's great.
I brought a
well
tear
done,
to.
Buddy.
I hope. Yeah, well done, man. And I wish you all the best.
With
and
whatever her name
with
be.
Whatever her name is,
007. Ben
007. Ben 007.
I hope it's Money Penny.
Money
Penny.
Let's get to that. Yeah.
And here's to hoping she doesn't want to kill me after that story.
No, that sounds fair.
It only took like 20 hours.
Yeah.
22 hours.
22 hours of my life.
It's a beautiful how you met someone you're dating. Is she your girlfriend yet? Is there phases of this? Or you don't want to get into that?
She is my girlfriend.
She's your girlfriend.
Labels.
It's love.
Labels
that's
are,
great.
It's love.
It's love.
It's
pretty much love.
And what did she call you? She got a pet name for you yet?
Oh, Ben.
Ben.
No.
I think she just calls me Kian. I haven't asked.
No, okay.
Haven't asked. I mean, you know because she calls you it.
Well, like,
if she's like, hey, Kian, then you know she calls you Kian. You don't need to guess.
Sorry. What do you usually call me again?
Yeah.
Kian. Yep. Sorry. Yeah. Now I'm asked. Sorry. Now I'm good.
Let me just check my birth certificate. Oh, yeah. That's me. Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Have I been getting that right? The 5 or 7 dates that we've been on? Oh, good. Good.
So, yeah.
Excellent. To be fair, with me, I have 7 names to choose from, so there is a variety.
Kian, Ben, De, Vries, Turnell. 5.
No, he's got more middle names.
He's got more middle names.
Don't Jemima, ask him. Don't ask him what they are.
Reginald DeVries Turnell. She's not calling you DeVries, though.
No.
Reginald Jemima's a cracking Reginald name.
Also, like, if you call someone DeVries, that's not particularly unique. Like,
it means legitimate, right?
There's 10 million of us in Holland.
Can I have a cheeseburger? Would you like DeVries with that?
No, I don't.
I have to do podcasts with that guy. It's the worst. Right, how do we top that? I don't know if we can top that. That's about it.
We can talk about Magic Origins.
I'm a bit worried.
Which is,
yeah, we can.
Probably
that,
better than that.
That is
sorry.
Right. I was just a bit concerned now because that was kind of like our Weekend Geek bit, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about Ken's love life. There's no love in
Geek.
Yeah. Oh. I've got my notes here. I did see Michael Jackson at the bus stop on the way here tonight.
Did you take a picture of him?
No, it was... Well, it might have also been like an Asian girl with like goth gear on.
Most likely Michael Jackson, though.
But more likely than... Because he's still alive,
and she's maybe had a broken nose. He's looking healthy, though. He's looking good.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Yeah, but
he's
doing it
in Perth.
Yeah.
Strange.
Well, you can get isolated.
Trawling bus stops, as you do.
Just hoping that people recognize
that's
him.
How you have a bus in Perth.
Awkward. So you like, are you Michael Jackson? Yep, cool.
Yes, I mean, no. All right. I bet if it's Michael Jackson, he probably wouldn't need a bus. That's what I thought. As I drove on, I thought.
Well, he does now, because people think that he's dead, so they've closed his
bank
accounts.
Yeah, he lost all his money when he faked his own death to come over to Australia.
I really did consider this seriously. I thought, well, he wouldn't catch a bus. Then I thought, well, he wouldn't wear his stage outfit either.
Oh, no, but he would. Time. Like, drawing attention to it is the best
to
way
deflect.
To hide.
Hiding in plain sight.
Hiding in plain sight, that's what I was looking for.
Michael Jackson's the Assassin's Creed years.
Yeah.
Is beautiful. Is he hiding, like, the nose on your face?
That would be another one.
That's why you got the girls. DeVries.
Oh, wow. Is the weird plastic surgery altered nose on his weird pasty white face.
All right. Have we got any other big stories in Geek? Because otherwise I'm staring down a Magic Origins booster, which needs busting.
I'd love to bust
Magic
Origins booster.
All
right, let's
bust
do that then.
I'm busting to bust.
Bust.
Bust the booster! Yeah! Bust the booster.
That was good.
All right. Smell that flavor.
Well, I haven't opened it yet, Ken. All right, busting the booster.
What?
And the flavor text comes later on. You're jumping way ahead in the program. I don't know what Marshall's talking about. I don't know. I think he's overdoing it now.
There is. It's like a glue. It's like a packaging smell. It doesn't smell like anything now.
Maybe he's just got really sweaty fingers and he just like melts
just
that.
Sniffing his hand.
And the glue just melts in his hand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It just must be very warm. No, he's in Seattle. Yeah. It's not even warm there. It's chilly. Yeah.
Anyway, much respect.
The factory though in Seattle, so maybe they've still got that set. He's
right
getting them
there.
Off the production line in
just,
Seattle.
Yeah, like a fresh, crispy cream.
Yeah, yeah.
We love our Marshall and limited resources friends.
And constructed resources.
Oh, yes.
They're now, aren't they?
No, they were on the other day.
I thought they can do it.
No.
Oh, it was him and Ephro.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right, sure.
Yeah, anyway.
Their set review was...
We're kicking off with a card I've seen before. Like, this is the very first pack I've ever opened. I'm here to learn from you guys about what Magic Origins is all about. And immediately I've seen Charging Griffin, which is a 3 and a white creature. Who is a griffin? He's a 2/2. He's got flying. And whenever Charging Griffin attacks, he gets +1/+1 until the end of turn. Fellas.
I'd be really upset if I had to first pick this. It's like a mediocre filler white card.
Yeah.
I think it's better than that. Like, I wouldn't want to first pick it either, but I think it's pretty good. Like, this is a format where you board stall a lot with, like, low-power creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Having a 3-power flyer can be really good, can close out games.
Maybe not
evasion's stronger.
Like, It's going to back up. It's great and aggressive. Great and aggressive.
Changing his mind like three times.
No. If you're playing white, you want to be aggressive. Like, you're probably playing green, white, or red, white usually.
Yeah, like, you want it in your aggressive white decks, but you don't want it in anything that wants a game to go long because it blocks horrendously.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by saying it's unplayable.
It's unplayable. It's terrible. It's trash.
Well, I mean, attacking, it's a hill giant. Defending, it's a Shaman of the Spring or whatever.
A flying
like
a hill giant.
Attacking, like, it hits for three.
Yeah, that's a hill giant.
Yeah. So, like, I've been in situations where I've got one of these in my hand and I'm just like, I don't even want to play this because I'm not going to block with it. I'm not, like, I feel like if I'm attacking with it, I'm just getting cracked back for even more. So it has to be backed up by good twos and threes to get your aggressive start.
And it costs a four. It's coming late on.
Yeah, you don't want to play four for a 2/2. It's not going to gum up the board. It's literally just there to attack. It's like it can pretty much...
There are cheaper flyers with two power?
There are, but they all have their own downsides and stuff. Yeah, like, this is only really going in aggressive decks. You can't put it in a mid-range or control deck.
All right, so we'll toss that to one side. My God, who did this? Jim Murray drew this next one. Macabre Waltz.
Yeah, there's something going on there.
Wow. Okay, Macabre Waltz is one and a swamp for a sorcery that does return up to two target creature cards from your graveyard to your hand, then discard a card. For two.
I wanted to see dudes like waltzing in a ballroom as a thing with like zombies being waltzed through a ballroom.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I would like
to see. As
opposed
to whatever the hell is going on.
As opposed to someone looks like they're being melted.
It's two dead people dancing.
I like the picture.
They could have given them a ball gown though or something. It's a dance, guys. Dress up.
Yeah. It doesn't really look like they're waltzing very much. Anyway,
the card to play with
is bad.
It's good. You got to work hard.
No,
for
it's
your,
fine.
You got to work hard for your card advantage in the set, and I quite like this. Has really impressed me so far. I've had it in grindy control decks where you need to get back flyers, good blockers, and draft. It's good enough. The format like is aggressive. It's full of lots of aggressive creatures. But once you get past that point, you've traded off a bunch of dudes. You need some way to turn lands into the creatures that you traded off and stuff, and I was using it to get back my my win conditions, my flying creatures. I trade when they're not expecting them to, and then I can get them back with Macabre Waltz and stuff.
Yeah, it's much better in this format than you'd think. Like, it's card advantage is really rare, and the format's very aggressive, so you want to have a lot of twos and threes, and you want to be trading off on the board early, so you're going to have a lot of good value creatures in the yard, and this just lets you pull them back. Like, it wouldn't be great in a vacuum in other formats, but it's good here.
Yeah.
It seems pretty good, isn't it? It's just like, draw a card, and you know roughly which card you're going
to get. Just hold a sandbag of land in your hand later on, draw two creatures, and pitch your land.
So if this is in your deck, you need to be... You need to keep something to discard later if you know that you're going to be maybe drawing this.
Chuck one of the cards that you just drew, though, right? You can draw two cards, toss
one. If you're
one.
Doing that...
You don't want to do that. You want to get two good cards.
You can do it with an empty hand, but...
If you're doing that, the card you're bringing back
better be really good.
Win the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at two cost, it's good all the way through the game, though, right? Once your graveyard's got a decent amount, it's still going to be like four or five.
There's a slight self-mill theme in this set as well. Okay. So I had... a blue-black control deck that I want to draft with here that had two return centaurs to gum up the ground. They're 2/4s that mill target player for four. But a lot of people are going, why would I want to mill my opponent for four if I've got no other mill cards?
You mill yourself. And Macabre Waltz, you
charge
way to
up
victory.
Your Shadows of the Past, which I'll talk about later as well, and your Macabre Waltz can hit.
And just Spellmaster as well. Like
Spellmaster
in this set, which is pretty relevant.
Yep. All right, we've got Act of Treason, another familiar card from long ago. Two.
Oh, sorry, after all that, we're not first picking this.
No, we're not taking Macabre Waltz.
It's a late pick card, yeah.
Act of Treason, two on a mountain for a sorcery that does gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. Or the old treason cards, we know about those. Yeah, not excited
about
that.
Fine in aggressive decks. It's good in the black red sacrifice. Have you played black red sacrifice?
Yeah, absolutely.
Deck?
It's insane in that deck. It's like, that's what I was going to say. It's very, it's like a polarized card. In that deck, black red sacrifice, where you play cards like Nantuko Husk and the Blazing Hellhound,
yeah.
That lets you sacrifice
and
creatures.
Fiery Conclusion.
Yeah, and you also have Enthralling Victory in those decks as well. So that card in that deck is insane. But first pack, you don't know if you're in it, and it's really bad in most other decks. So
there's a loose archetype in black-red called Black-Red Sacrifice, where you gain control of their stuff with Act of Treason and Enthralling Victor until end of turn. And usually you have to give it back to them at end of turn, but what you do is you sacrifice it to sacrifice outlets like Husk. Oh, after hitting them with it.
Yeah.
Nantuko Husk, Fiery Conclusion,
Fleshbag Marauder,
and Blazing Hellhound.
Oh, so you get the benefit uncommon. For sacking it, and they don't get it back.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Ah, what yeah. a bastardly yeah. play that is.
It's a,
nice
it's, a, it's a great little archetype.
Yeah. All right.
Not first pickable, though. You no. go. Pick them up later.
Yeah.
Celestial Flare is two planes, and it's an instant. Target player sacrifices an attacking or blocking creature. Guys,
it's yeah.
The
it's
two planes
rough.
Sort of says it's more highly costed for
yeah.
trickier
it's,
to play.
You're not like it's in such an awkward spot because the white decks all seem to want to be aggressive.
Bit of removal,
but removal, yeah, kills a big bomb later. Like you've got to be aware of it at all times, but it's not a high pick. It's like.
Yeah, it's just
not
easy to play around with
either.
This format. Exactly. So
yeah.
the best use of this, or the way you really have to use it, because everyone that you play against, it's good. It always plays around if you're holding up two white mana, because mm-hmm. it's common, it's everywhere.
Yep.
So you have to, the interaction with this that people have to know is that your creatures still count as attacking or blocking after damage. So if they attack you with like a really big creature and a smaller
yeah.
creature to try and play around flare, and then you block the smaller guy, trade off with one of your other guys, take the damage from the other guy... Then post damage after you've traded with their small guy, it still counts as attacking. So
still,
post
yeah.
damage, you can
in
flare
the
and kill their big guy.
End of combat
yeah.
step. Yeah.
So,
yeah
that's,
so that's when it's at its best. But like people have been playing against me online with this card, and they've never done that. It's just not
yeah.
common knowledge. To
yeah, that's wow. that's how you have to use it. If you don't do it like that, it's not great because everyone just attacks with two dudes and plays around it.
So. Listeners, I think we just got a pro tip.
Pro tip. That's,
pro
what,
tip.
That's what we call
pro
it.
Pro tip.
All right, Yveh's Force Mage. Man, there's a lot of cards I've seen before on this. Set is there a lot of cards coming back?
Yeah, yeah. Like Origins is technically a core set. It's got
yeah.
plenty of reprints, but also plenty of new mechanics and
yeah.
And
I like the
flavor.
And we talked about that before with the flavor of the themes. Yveh's Force Mage is two in a forest for an elf shaman who's a 2/2. When Yveh's Force Mage enters the battlefield, target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. So a bit of a pump.
So this is like another. This is like
frowning.
A role player in a certain deck. So this is played in the Green White Renown deck. So obviously this effect is just not great on its own. But where this card's really good is when you go turn two, play a Renown creature. Like there's Token Freeblade, whatever it's called,
yeah.
top and Freeblade.
Token Freeblade, yeah.
Yeah, there's which is just a two like a white colorless 2-drop with Renown. There's also a green troll that's really good as well, which is just a 2/2 Renown creature.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that you play that on two, then they're going to play their own 2/2, so you can't really attack in.
Yeah.
But instead, on turn three, you untap, play Force Mage, make your 2/2 a 4/4.
They don't
then
want
to
trade
attack.
Off the dude and get nothing.
Exactly. Either they have the chump block, which is really good for you, or they let it through and then you Renown your guy, so it's bigger for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So that's where this card is good. On its, in other archetypes, it's not so great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like me and Rob were looking at my draft deck that I had in the store yesterday. And we cut Yveh's Force Mage because it just it doesn't do enough in like a mid-rangey green deck where you're not trying to connect one or two damage. In that case, it only puts two damage through and they get a choice to block it or not. So it's just like, they're always aware of it. So it's
yeah,
it's
and then
great.
You get left with a 2/2 for three on board, which is not
which
a
is
great
not
position.
A great
yeah.
return, yeah.
Bogart Brute. He was a goblin warrior with menace. And that's it. He's a 3/2 and he costs two and a mountain. Bogart Brute.
So menace is a new ability word in this set.
Yeah,
It's like an evasion. It means the creature can't be blocked except by two or more creatures. So this is a 3/2 that's going to come down. It's not going to get blocked by whatever random creature they have out. They've actually got a plan around blocking it with two or more creatures. And then so that means that pump spells and stuff and tricks get better. With cards like this because they have to put two dudes in front of it. And it's just doming him for three every turn. Otherwise, it's a very, very strong common. It's a strong red common. Yeah.
Is it goblin? Is there a tribal theme going on? Strong enough for gobbos?
No. Not really. There's Pile Driver, but it's like just horrible,
nah,
basically.
Pile Driver is... I would pick this over Pile Driver, pick one.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
If I had to.
In less value.
I don't care.
The Pile Driver's not even worth it anymore.
It's worth like
no
six,
one's playing
$7.
It, yeah.
Is that online? Or
no, it's worth like two tickets online, I think, or three tickets online.
Yeah, but Origins like has tanked the price of it. It's like
yeah, yeah.
tens of millions of
dollars. Oh, the old version's still worth a bit, but the new one is
yeah.
not worth much. Mm-hmm.
All right. Alchemist's Vial. It's an artifact, so it's too colorless.
What have you got against alchemists?
Alchemists? What did I... Why?
You said they were vile.
It's a joke, guys.
It's a joke.
Joke.
When
you make a funny joker.
When Alchemist's Vial enters the battlefield, draw a card.
They're good words.
Yeah. And then for one and tapping it, sacrifice Alchemist's Vial. Target creature can't attack or block this turn. You can do it over and over and over.
Well, the blue-red archetype is an artifact-heavy one. It rewards you for having more artifacts and stuff in play.
They've got the hint there with the blue and the red in the picture.
Oh, they actually do. Yeah. Look at that. It draws you a card, so it's replacing and stuff. This is not what you want to be casting on turn two, though. You want to be casting a thing that affects the board in some way, and the ability at the end is kind of marginal. You just want it to be turning on your artifact matter stuff.
So the deck I've had that actually was good with this card, mm-hmm. the only one I've had, it was like a blue-black control deck with, I had Thopter Spy Network and triple Artifice Epiphany. And
so
yeah, and
good.
I got two of these and like just a bunch of the, you know, I got Chief of the Foundry and a bunch of just like the three drop generic artifact guys.
Dirty.
And two of the bonded constructs, like the one drops.
Oh, cool.
So it was actually great. Like it was very, that was a winning deck.
So. Yeah,
whenabouts did you play it?
Last night.
No, actually, I mean, in what turn?
Oh, like, I don't know. Well, this early, just whenever you draw it. Just cause So Thopter Spy Network is just an enchantment that you basically get effects from having an artifact in play. Like, if you have an artifact in play, at the start of your turn, you generate a 1-1 flying artifact.
Yeah.
But if you have none, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So this is just something you can play on turn two. It just cycles your card. And especially in a deck where you've got, like, a one bomby card you're digging for, this effect is great because it gives you the artifact for the card and it helps you dig a card. So
Whereas you're not just chucking this in every deck because it just doesn't do all that much.
Yes.
Like it,
something to note.
I had Ramroller as well.
Better in sealed.
Better in sealed because the games go longer. You want to draw your big bum.
Yeah, it was good with Ramroller as well. You play it on turn two, sets your Ramroller up, buffs your Ramroller.
It's a 4-3, a 2-3 that has to attack every turn, but it gets +2/+0 if you have an artifact. And this is an artifact that they can't kill very easily. So there you go, Ramroller.
Also has some sweet flavor text.
What? Ramroller?
No. Alchemist file.
Oh.
A weapon best suited for... No, I don't know.
No, forget about it. Unholy Hunger, 3/2 slams.
There we go, now we're talking.
Right. Instant. It's got a bit of a sexy Liliana picture at the front of this one. Anyway, Unholy Hunger is 3/2 swamps for an instant destroy target creature.
That's those three words.
We like those words.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes with spell mastery. If there are two or more instant or sorcery cards in your graveyard, you gain 2 life. So, incidental life gain, I imagine you're about to say.
Yeah, exactly. Like, life gain's not great unless it's being just tacked onto effects that you'd already be playing. And I would already play this. 3 black, destroy target creature, I'd play. And the Spellmaster's just gravy.
Oh, just Unholy Hunger? It's just perfect. I mean, like, it's expensive, but in this format, 5 mana is... That's what you have to pay for removal.
It's kind of what we've been paying for a while, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's the sip of... what's it?
Sip of Hemlock and Theros. So, you had Liturgy of Blood in M14. You had... we haven't played...
Flesh to Dust?
Yeah, Flesh to Dust and M15 as well, which was just this without the Spellmastery Rider on it.
Yeah.
So I think they found like a sweet spot for limited removal spells. They want people's creatures to stick. They want to focus on creature combat. So your hard removal spell is going to cost 5. And it's going to have not much upside apart from just destroying the thing.
Yeah, this is the best card in the pack so far.
Yep.
So, small flavor thing, if you look at the artwork... of this card.
Ken's doing the Flavor Buster because he hasn't seen many of the cards here.
Flavor Buster.
The angel in this card is Archangel of Tides.
Which is a white mythic rare.
And this is where Liliana gets her crown that she wears for her entire thing.
Yeah.
So this is kind of one of those magic origin
bands. So if you look at the art for Unholy Hunger, it's a bunch of zombies killing the Archangel of Tides, which in the Archangel of Tides picture has this fancy like headpiece on. And in this picture, Liliana set a horde of zombies on the angel, and she's now appropriated the said headdress.
She's just waltzing off looking smooth as.
Yep.
Wearing
waltzing,
a new,
like the black card. That we get. Sure.
Topan Freemaid, 1 and a plains for a human soldier who's a 2/2 with vigilance.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good deal so far.
This is a good deal.
Tell me
and it's
more.
Got renown 1.
Oh, my God.
So you get in there, you get a +1/+1.
Woo!
I like this card, right?
This thing is a beat stick.
Yeah, I would 100% pick this card out of this pack.
This is the...
And it's still, we're still in the commons.
Yeah, so these are among the two best commons in their respective colors. Tobin Freeblade's going to be the main thing that... What?
Kian's enacting the artwork, I believe.
Oh God!
Good.
Kian's really grasping at straws
for a podcast
to this one.
Actually, this card I can say something about.
Yeah. Tell us.
Go.
This card in sealed was the bomb diggity.
Like, yeah, it's real good.
Because if you play it on two, if you're on the play, you play it on two. You almost always get to attack in, and if they haven't played a 2-2, it gets in, it's a 3-3. And then there isn't actually anything that's just a 3-3 below 4 mana.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So for turn 2, you probably got in for 2 damage or traded with a bear, which you're okay with. If it got through, then turn 3 and even turn 4, it's getting in again. And then you're either drawing removal, trading up with like their 4-drop or whatever. Mm-hmm. And all this while, you've just been able to play dudes.
And it's because of the renown and vigilance. You can get in, and then you come out, you're a 3-3, and then when they're looking at their 2-2 going, well, I've got nothing to do with that now. Yeah. So that's yeah.
And you can see, so that's the combo here. So you have the turn 2 Topin Freeblade, and then you have turn 3, and then they'll play their 2-drop, and then you have the turn 3 Yavis Force Mage.
Yeah.
So it's got vigilance, push it through, they can't block it. Then you have a 3-3 blocker, vigilant on defense, yeah. so it's really good.
It's just like, this is going to be the factor of a lot of frustration in the set where I keep a hand, or whoever keeps a hand with no 2-drop, and they go, Topin Freeblade, and you can't interact with it until turn 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
You're just getting hit for 2, and then 3, and then 3, and then 3 every turn. And you can't even race them, because it's got vigilance as well. It blocks all your 2-power guys.
There's a green version of this one that has Regenerate as well, which is
even more frustrating to play against. Which is
insane to play against, yeah.
Undercity Troll.
I lived the dream with this card where I played it on turn 2, and then on turn 3 I played the 1-3 with Renown. But whenever a card goes Renown, you draw a card.
Yep.
I attacked. They had not yet played a creature. I drew a card.
Yeah, that like how, it's very, the combo. Very,
I had a card that draws a card.
Very
draw a card.
Difficult
yeah.
to lose good. From that yeah. position.
Into the uncommons, we've gone big green. We've gone Sky Snare Spider. 4 Whoa. And 2 Forest for a 6-6. Who's got Vigilance and Reach.
Huge.
This guy's a good big
huge.
Body, isn't he, for a 6-drop?
He's massive. He's one of the biggest bodies in the set.
So this card...
He's been lifting some serious weights. He's been bulking.
Bulking up all 8
of
his legs.
Protein. Because everything else in Magic Origins is quite small. The fact that we said Topin Freeblade was outclassing stuff as a 3-3 just means that this is going to come down. It's going to shake the screen like it does in Hearthstone. And they're going to be like, oh, I can't attack past that anymore because it's got vigilance as well.
If spiders are working out, do they buy... just 2 dumbbells, or are they doing the whole lot?
No, it's expensive to be a weightlifter spider. That's why you don't see many.
We've got 8 dumbbells.
That's the reason that you don't see many weightlifting spiders.
You don't see you. You don't see a lot
really
of them.
Really don't, honestly.
Man, Magic should think about it. Anyway, guys, we're happy with that. Sky Slim Spider.
How do you rate these 3 so far, Rob?
I think the Freeblade is the best card so far. Yep. Unholy Hunger is very good if you like playing black as well, though. So it's close. Sky Slim Spider is amazing, but this is a fast format, and turn 6 is slow, and there's... like, you can always pick up filler at, like, the 5-6 cost slot to give you a win condition.
Yeah.
Whereas you really need... like, it's a race to pick up the good 2 and 3 drops in this format. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take the 6 drop and then pass someone a free blade.
Yeah, this is one of the more... This is one of the most aggressive formats that I've played in a few years. Since Gatecrash, I think this is the most aggressive format.
Okay.
It's got Theros levels of getting snowballed out of,
yeah,
out of some games.
Yeah, I Theros-y feel at it, especially out of these 3 cards.
Mm-hmm.
No enchantments in there.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
You know,
but you're going to lose games where you play Sky Snare Spider as your big thing to gum up the ground and they return it to your hand. And like,
yeah, or they just claustrophobia you, or like Void Mage Prodigy, which bounces it. There's a lot of ways to remove it. So
Topin Freeblade here is by far the most flexible and powerful, whereas sometimes you don't even... it's too late by the time you're unholy hungering their 3-3.
I didn't know if that was a personal weakness of drafting, is I always felt like I'd want to like get the early drop cards in quicker. I'd feel more confident picking up the Sky Snare Spider later and just making sure I've got a stronger early game. You know,
it's
rarely that you see a 6-6 and go like, yeah, that's straight in, unless it comes
with a
whole bunch of stuff.
It's a good strategy to go down, and man, I've been playing too much Hearthstone. I keep wanting to turn everything into Hearthstone allegories, but in the draft version of Hearthstone, the newer you are, the more you prioritize low drops because you need to get on the board quickly and stay there. And it's the same in this format as well, whereas like there's not much stuff that punishes you for going 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop, whereas in the past you could just like put a bestow on your guy that gave it vigilance and suddenly had the biggest thing on the board and they couldn't deal with
it. Yeah, you can keep building.
Whereas now you can just like, there's so many ways to just bounce a stupid 6-drop that getting on the board and staying there is very important.
Yeah. All right, second uncommon is Conclave Naturalists. A bunch of other dryads. I was about to accuse them of being horny elves, but I suppose there's a difference. Conclave Naturalists costs 4 and a forest for a 4-4. When Conclave Naturalists enters the battlefield, you may destroy target artifact or enchantment.
So these guys are really good at casting one spell, and it's Naturalize. That's yes. their job in the magic world.
Yeah, yeah.
And if not, and if your opponent doesn't have an artifact or enchantment, you're paying 5 for a 4/4 that does nothing
else.
Which
is an okay.
Like, yeah. this card's actually good. A 4/4 body is good. Turn 5 is not that slow to come down. There's a lot of artifacts and enchantments in this set. Like, every color has basically artifacts
and people are playing them?
Well, yeah.
Oh, the enchantments. So.
Like, there's a lot of, in sort of the black, white decks, there's a lot of enchantments. Even, like, red has a lot of enchantments. And then a lot of the blue decks will be playing artifacts of some type. There's a lot of good mid-range artifact creatures. Like, there's 3/3 creatures for 4 mana, etc., that you use to fill your curve. So people often have targets. So this is actually very good in this
format. Do you feel a bit unhappy, though, if you're playing green and you're paying more mana than your power toughness? It always feels like you always usually get a bit more for your money,
don't
you?
Kill their, 3/3 guy or their cheats of the foundry. Yeah. Or you're always great.
But it's about context. And in this format, the creatures are a lot smaller than they have been the last few sets. Like Khans of Tarkir, every color had 4/4s because you had to have morph. You had to have a thing that was okay to play at 3, so it's a 2/2.
Yeah.
And when you flip it up, bam, it's a 4/4. It's a 4/5 or something. Whereas now we're just we're fighting over 2/2s and 2/3s and 3/3s and stuff. A 4/4 is going to be the biggest thing on the board on turn 5.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
so really even good. If it comes down and just swats a Thopter out of the sky.
I like fighting over 2/2s. It's kind of good though, isn't it?
It's good. I like it. I've just not wrapped my head around it yet. I'm getting rolled by all these 2/2 decks.
I'm all about the 2/2s. My decks are just all 2/2s. Yeah.
All right. What's the format on this pack? Because I'm just looking. This is our last uncommon. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards left.
We're missing a common, so I think that we have a... Oh, foil. No, no. 3, 6, 7, 8, 9. So I think we have a foil.
We're foiling it up today, people. To be exciting. Always wanted a foil, Liliana.
Living the dream.
All right. We've got a land card, so you'd better talk to us about uncommon what land does in this.
Oh, Foundry of the Consoles.
Foundry of the Consoles.
This card's Dece, right?
Yes.
So you can tap it and add one.
It's Dece.
Just inventing our own lingo here. Tap and add one to your mana pool, or pay 5 and tap it, sacrifice Foundry of the Consoles, and put 2/1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield.
That's quite a mouthful, actually. In my mind, it's just like 5 tap, put 2 Thopters into play. But
yeah.
But it's wordy.
Yeah. It is.
Sack a land. Colorless artifact creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield.
It doesn't seem. That seems shitty, right? It's like pay 5, get 2/1/1 flyers.
Surprisingly good. Okay,
and
so,
lose your land.
Yeah, so, but things to consider. Yeah. 1, it makes. It's a good late game play. You get 2/1/1s, chump block their thing, kill them with it. It's like a 2/2 flyer attached to a land, doesn't take up a spell slot in your deck.
Yeah, so you can play 23 spells. So 23/17 is the normal split. And this lets you play effectively another spell without having to sacrifice a slot. So you can still play 17 land, but effectively play an extra spell in your deck.
Mm-hmm. Put it this way, Dave. People are actually talking about this card in Constructed.
Yeah,
we know what those guys are like.
I think you could. There may be room for 1 or 2 of it in the Hangerback decks
There's not because you have to play Darksteel Citadel with Digi 4, and then you've got to play 2 color decks. This mana's not good enough. I've got one copy in a blue red Thopters deck that did really well at an SCG event recently.
Oh yeah,
it plays a lot of aggressive stuff, but only plays 1, and that's still marginal.
But for a card that sounds this bad and. On the face of it, if you haven't played Magic before, this card sounds bad. To be talked about in Constructed, it's very good and limited.
You've never played Magic, this is probably not the podcast for you.
For someone that hasn't played Magic, why are you here?
Yeah.
What are you doing? They're just here to listen to Keane's dulcet tones.
They want to hear how his love life's going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't listen to any of that Magic shit. I just listen in for the...
Yeah.
I
just want to hear the 007 adventures. I don't want to...
Oh my God.
007, what have you been up to this week?
Yeah. And in our rare spot, it's Keane's going on his first date. And how is that going? is that a good... What card is he going to play? All right, so I'm going to edge up the...
It's fine. You can make sure that your color... I'm going to play this in most decks where I don't have heaps of double color stuff, because you don't ever want to get caught with 3 lands in your hand, and you've got a double white spell, a double black spell, and then this is one of your lands, and you can't cast a bunch of stuff. But it's not going to happen that often. It's a strong card.
Yeah, it's pretty good. This one and also the Maitri Network. No.
How do you like Maitri Network?
It's actually been good as well, just because, you can sit back on it later on, charge the land, then drop, 2 things in 1 turn.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Playing 2 spells a turn, real nice.
All right, first Origins pack I've opened. So the next card is the foil. We're not getting the rare next. Is that right? Is that how they pack them?
Oh, no, rare, then foil.
Rare than five. That's how they usually do it.
I'm pretty sure this means that we have a planeswalker.
What? No, no, no. He's no. It no, will be a rare next, regardless.
It's uncommon, but it's a foil.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, so the planeswalkers are last in the packing order.
Yep.
Oh. So
this could be the greatest Flip Summerland Handbuster booster ever. We've waited for this moment. All right, who we got now? So the foil is.
Didn't we open a shitty planeswalker one time? I'm pretty sure. No, I don't think we did.
Didn't we?
Did we have a Narset?
Anyway, no. Let's forget about what we have done. No one's vomited
resources.
Yeah, let's do it now.
Yeah, let's do it today. So this foil, which I've only seen as a foil, could just be an uncommon.
Could be
common,
anything.
Could be anything.
It is Knightly Valor.
Ooh,
this card is ridiculous.
Real, real good.
Yeah. This card is like. This card is first pickable easily.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it then. Knightly Valor, 4 and a planes for an enchantment aura. Enchant creature. When Knightly Valor enters the battlefield, put a 2/2 white knight creature token with vigilance onto the battlefield. Huh. Enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has vigilance. So you pump someone and you get a vigilance knight, 2/2.
Mm. So the first limited format I ever played seriously was Return to Ravnica, and in that set, this card was a common, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah, uncommon this time through.
It was quite strong in Return to Ravnica, but you could still get, you know, out aggroed. Well, it was very, very, very good in Return to Ravnica still. Like, in this, it's huge. Makes your creature, if you have a 3/3, again, we were saying 4/4s are like among the biggest things on the board.
Yeah.
A guy put this on his Ringwarden Owl against me yesterday. I had nowhere to kill a 5/5 with flying. Like, it's just.
And prowess.
And, and prowess. Trigger, so we attack me for 6 on that turn.
Spew value combo is when they have the Totem Heart Beast, the one that lets you search for enchantments. People are like, play this, it's a 5 drop.
2/5.
2/5 guy. Yeah, that lets you search your library for any enchantment and put it in your hand. So they play that guy, and then they find this, and then next time they play this thing on that guy. It's insane.
Yeah,
and they have
and there's a 4/7 with vigilance. You just hit.
And they have another
2/2
as well. And they just pound.
And it's an antelope, which is just the best thing to kill someone with.
So this card's very good. Yeah.
So it's powerful because you're paying 5 mana. Obviously, don't play it if they have open mana and possibly a removal spell, because then you get none of the benefits of it.
Right.
But be safe. Just be safe, kids.
Just be safe.
Don't play a Knightly Valor on an unprotected creature. It adds 2 power of haste, pretty much, onto the board, because you're attacking with a creature you couldn't previously get in with, because maybe it was too small. So you've got a 3/3, they've got a 3/3. Bam, Knightly Valor, you've got a 5/5 that can attack this turn.
Yeah.
With vigilance, so you can block their 3/3 on the way back. And you get another body in case they kill it on their turn as well. It's just like, it's great value.
And in this case, it's a foil.
Mm. And it's foil, so.
And
that
it might be rubbing up against Planeswalker.
Can I have a look at the foil?
I still think that I like Topin Freeblade better. Yeah.
I think in this pack as well.
The only
problem we've got in this pack is that now that this card is a really good white card, if we take the Topin Freeblade and then we ship it to the guy to our left, he's likely to take the Knightly Valor.
Yeah,
because it's
right.
The next
but
best
I
putting
think
him to white.
Knightly Valor and Unholy Hunger are like close
enough,
I reckon. Yeah,
Unholy Hunger is still probably. It's still out of Topin Freeblade and Unholy Hunger in this pack, I think.
Because I'd prefer to be on the Unholy Hunger side than the Knightly Valor side. At the moment, as how I play, but like that might change.
I want to be on the Topin Freeblade side, man.
What about the Knightly Valor side?
I know. I would take the Freeblade over the Valor. Anyway, let's see the next one.
All right, the next one is hopefully a Planeswalker, and it is done by Wesley Burt. No, it's a 2/2 creature.
Yeah, all the creatures.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What color is it?
I know what color it is. It's Nissa.
Oh.
Is that where's that one right?
It's quite expensive.
Nissa Vastwood Seer. Oh my god, there's a lot of text. We'll be here for a while. 2 and a forest.
Trivia, this has the most text on any Magic card ever printed.
Really?
That's not silver boarded.
You've just blown MTG card quiz out of water. No, you don't.
Okay, good. I was like,
all right. So Nissa
would not be the first time.
Nissa Vastwood Seer. When Nissa Vastwood Seer enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a basic forest card, reveal it and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, if you control 7 or more lands, exile Nissa and flip her over. I paraphrased the last bit there.
Sure.
Right, so we flip her over without looking at the. There's 2 more cards in this pack.
The land and a token.
All right. And then you get Nissa Sage Animist looking pretty evil there. Do you want to talk
racist?
She's racist, that's why. Yeah.
she's gone racist.
Super racist.
That's the flavor text at the bottom.
So Nissa Sage Animus on the other side. She's a planeswalker on this side. Enters the battlefield because you exile her and she comes into play with 3 loyalty counters. Her +1 ability is reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land, put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, what do? Maybe you put it on the bottom of your library? Because green doesn't usually get card drawn. No, you put it in your hand. If it's a land, you put it into play.
Yeah.
If it's not a land, you put it in your hand. So it's like green plus one draw a card.
It's almost insane, basically.
Oh, my lord.
Yeah.
Negative two, so it should go down to one counter if you do it the first turn. Put a legendary 4/4 green elemental creature token onto the battlefield. It's got some silly name that we don't need to know.
Asherani?
Asherani!
I don't know what it is
either. Ashaya, okay. The Awoken World. So put a 4/4 green legendary token into play, so you can't have more than one of them. Immediately coming into play, putting a 4/4 down to protect it, pretty cool. And then her ultimate ability is -7. I don't really see this happening very often.
No, but it's four turns
36
away.
Power.
Yeah, untap up to 6 target lands. They all become 6/6 elementals.
Win the game.
Lands.
Oh my god, is that right? 6/6?
And they all have haste because you already controlled them before the start of your turn.
Oh yeah, so immediately usable.
So this card,
I think this card's pretty good.
I think it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
Let's talk about the creature side because you're going to see that more often. Because
you've got to get to 7 lands.
Yeah.
So when she enters the battlefield, you get to bang out a land.
Basic forest from your deck into your hand. So it's not fantastic. She's very fragile on the front. But the fact is, early, this comes down, draws you a land out of your deck. Attack, block, do whatever. It doesn't really matter. But if you draw this late in the game, on turn 7, you don't have a land in your hand, you draw Nissa, you play her, get that forest out of your deck, play her as your 7th land, she flips immediately, and then you can use one of her abilities. So it's just like one of the best possible things that you could draw late game.
Right.
So I think one of the biggest things we have to point out here is if you have this in your deck, and this goes with all of the Planeswalkers, you can't think of them as Planeswalkers, you have to think of them as the creature that they are. And then
I don't
want to
think of it as a
2/2.
I don't want to. I want to think of it as a Planeswalker.
Well, too bad.
There's a Planeswalker on the other side of this card.
Like, so this is them pre-Spark, which is their Planeswalker like ignition moment.
Their origin. Yeah.
And so she's pretty weak on the front, but that is what you're paying for, and you need to really fulfill
three for
a quest,
a 2/2,
a land quest. But really, if you think of it as a 2/2 that draws you a forest when it comes into play. That's okay.
Fine.
And then later on in the game, it comes down and it's just like, bam, is drawing you a card every turn, or is making 4/4s every turn that you can attack block with and whatever. It's very, very powerful. But I'm still not sure how it rates against some of the other stuff.
I don't get when to play it, right? So
if you have it in your hand on turn 3, play it on turn 3.
Turn it, play it straight away.
Yeah.
You should not be... You should not be afraid to just block a 2/2 with this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Like, yeah.
My God, this is blowing my mind.
Yeah. This gives you good value. Like, it's 2/4, and you get the land, and then you trade the guy, and you still get left with the land, so you're just ahead in the game.
And if they're like, oh, man, I got to unholy hunger that before it turns into a planeswalker, you ate the best removal spell in their hand for a 2/2.
And you have a land.
Yeah, and you drew the land to replace it with.
Okay, so I'm going to think of it as a 3-cost 2/2 that I get a land with as well.
So I'm going to pick this out of the pack, not for monetary reasons. At the Pro Tour, I probably pick... Oh, it depends. I don't know. Who knows? But Tobram Freeblade is always going to be a 2/2. It's a 2/2, it's a 2/2, it's a 2/2 on turn 2, turn 5, turn 10.
Yeah.
If you draw Nissa off the top on turn 10, oh, man, it's just like miles better than anything in this pack, apart from maybe Unholy Hunger or Knightly Valor, which can both affect the board immediately. But Nissa, the later the game goes, the more amazing Nissa's going to be. And the fact that it's like a morph, like a really, really strong morph that is a Planeswalker as well.
It's going to do that too.
At 3 mana, it's going to do something.
But it's a Planeswalker that you're never going to ultimate, though, is it?
No, you never ultimate.
Because the game won't go that long.
Nah.
You never ultimate. There's not really any Planeswalkers that you get to ultimate in Magic.
Gideon,
I have
zero
I have already ultimated this Planeswalker twice in Constructed.
Constructed,
you build your deck around it. But in Limited, you're not going to ultimate your Planeswalker. They'll be dead by
then. Yeah. You don't have like a million removal spells.
Yeah, because you've already drawn like 5 cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob, what are you picking?
I'm going to take the Nissa just because it's great. And like the only problem is that all the good cards in this pack are basically, besides Unholy Hunger, are green-white.
Yeah.
So what that means is that the everyone on your left that you're going to ship this pack to is also going to want to be going to green-white. Like, the next guy is probably going to pick... If you don't take the Unhunger, maybe one guy will pick that, but then the next picks are going to be probably the Freeblade, the Naturalist, the Skysnare Spider, and then even like the Griffin after that. So the next, all the guys on your left are going to be green and white.
They're going to be so unholy hunger
isn't a bad pick.
Like if you're doing this at a you really want to win this, you would take the unholy hunger, and that would push all the guys onto your left into green white because there's no other good black cards in this pack, and then you'll hope to cut all the black coming through that way, and then on pack two you'll hope to pick up all the black.
You're
cards.
Just going to pick up all the Lilianas that are passing your way.
I think Nissa is the better card, but I think everyone to your left is going to be in green white.
If we're talking about a super competitive level, because the Planeswalkers are double faced, there's no way to really hide them or anything, so they've said that it's kind of public information to everyone at the table that you've opened a Planeswalker. It is clearly signalling to the person that you're passing to and the person you will be passing to that you're most likely in green. So it can actually work in your favour.
So the way they do that, did you see how they did that at the GPs and stuff? So everyone opens a pack and then immediately you have to declare a Planeswalker and they switch it out with one of these cards in the booster so they don't know if you're picking it or not. So before you pick, it basically goes onto the middle of the table, and then this card, goes away basically, and then this card goes.
You just give it to a judge.
At the end of the draft, then they just whoever has the card gets it.
Okay,
so I think it's a good system.
It was a bit awkward in Innistrad. Everyone would open their pack because the rules back then were a little because you got a double face card in every pack. Eight people would open their pack and everyone would just be like, look at my double face card, looking around the table. You'd forget what someone opened, and then if they put it on top of their pile, but if they didn't, you're forgetting where everything was, why did that guy take that Delver of Secrets? That's a garbage draft card. Oh my god, he's got four Delver of Secrets now. But it's really easy to lose track of stuff. But in this case, everyone knows if you have a Planeswalker, if you're just playing at your store or whatever.
No. Kian, anything to disagree with there? You going with Nissa?
I actually think Unholy Hunger might be the pick.
Seems like a clever way to go, I think. It's like exactly the sort of points you made up, brought forward there, Rob, with making everyone else green, white, and hungry for that. Yeah. You're going to get a real good look on black. What's the black combo archetype?
There's a bunch. So just Unholy Hunger is just good in any black deck. So there's blue-black control, which can be good. It's a bit slow. You have to really... That deck needs...
Not a lot of blue in this pack either.
No, I know. Which is also not the worst sign because it means everyone else is going to see no blue and think that we've cut blue from this pack.
So you can go deep on your blue-black controlling kind of archetype and then four people to your left are fighting over green-white here.
But also, there's lots of good black decks. Black-white is very good. So, David Ochoa played a bunch of that at the GP recently. Basically every draft he played black-white.
I've drafted black-white twice, and both times it's quite an aggressive deck. You're getting bored with Topin Free Blades. You've got Reeve's Soul, which is a black common low-drop kill spell, so it kills creatures with power 3 or less. At sorcery speed, and you use that to get your renowned guys in instead of pump spells, so you have lasting effects on the board with your kill spells, and then the top end you've got the best removal and you still get access to all these great renowned creatures and flying dudes and stuff.
Cool. Alright, let's blob and start talking about all the other cards that we haven't seen.
Cool.
So the usual thing when we're drafting or something like that is that we're going to be opening packs with rares in it or mythic rares or whatever, and we're going to have a fistful of commons and uncommons. Mm-hmm. So you were saying that what might be interesting is to look at the best rares that are available.
The
best common versus the rares in each color.
Yeah, rares and mythics in each color. I don't think we'll cover all of them because there's just so many. One of the things that really perplexes me at the start of a draft format is where to rate these weird rares and mythics. And something that I had the pros do before the Pro Tours is rate the best common and uncommon versus the mythics and rares. So you can't draft enough times to open every single rare before a Pro Tour, so they just have this as a thought experiment.
But you're probably definitely going to see the commons that they're talking about.
So you open Erebos's Titan, which is a mythic you'd never open in draft. How do you compare that to Unholy Hunger or something? Right. And it's not going to come up in draft because that choice isn't going to be very common. But rating it against the best commons and uncommons is a good benchmark.
There's also a thing where you get quite experienced at using the commons and the uncommons extent. So you get real comfy with them, and then all of a sudden you get this rare or mythic rare, and you're going, this was rated really highly, but I'm not sure if I know how to use it. I've definitely been in that situation before.
So card evaluation at the start of a set is very difficult to apply to unique mythics like Erebos's Titan, Archangel of Tides, Alhamarit and stuff. It's just you don't have something to compare them to, whereas Unholy Hunger, we know that's good. It kills a creature for
so should we go through it colour by colour? Start off with white?
Yeah, sure. Yep,
right, what have we got? What's happening in white then?
So, do you have any disagreements with Topin Freeblade as the best white common?
I think it's very good, yeah.
Yeah. So Tobin Freeblade, best white common. It's got renown. Which
it's the Wingsteed Rider of the pack.
It is the Wingsteed Rider of the set.
Yeah.
It's what the white aggressive decks are built around. You're never going to be happy to have multiples of these. Yeah. And then, so you've got to compare this against other random rares that you're going to open in your packs.
So the white rares.
So Archangel of Tides, Kian. What do you think about Archangel of Tides? Pick one, pack one. Tobin Freeblade or Archangel of Tides.
What is
I
Archangel?
Think you have to pick Tobin Freeblade because Archangel of Tides has triple white in the mana, and especially in limited, that is exceptionally hard to cast.
The flip side of that is if it's pack one, pick one, you can just hit it and try and go mono white. Mm-hmm. Like you could never pick it up, like say pack three, pick one.
Yeah, this is true.
The only kind of time you can pick up a triple cost
Archangel
is like
of Tides, one white, white, 3/5 with flying. If it's untapped, creatures can't attack you unless they pay one for each attacking creature.
Yep. It's one white as well.
One white. For a 3/5.
So white.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
So 3/5 with flying. As long as it's untapped, so as soon as you cast it, creatures can't attack you or a planeswalker unless they pay one for each creature they want to attack with. And then as long as it's attacking, they can't block unless they pay one for each blocking creature. So it taxes their attacks, it taxes their blocks. And is also a huge 3/5 with flying, which dodges quite a bit of the removal in the set. But the biggest thing about this card is it's no two white, like Sublime Archangel or something where it's just like, ugh. Bam! Oh, that's turn four every time. This is difficult to cast.
Yeah,
it is one World Wide Web.
Where is your Topan's going to get to work for you straight away.
Straight away. You don't have to worry about casting it on curve. But, like we said, pick one, pack one. Kian doesn't want to be too committed to white, but you can choose to be committed to white after taking this pick one, pack
but
one.
If this is a pack risk. One, you're mono white from there on. Unless you get
on the
like, cards.
You're heavy white,
you're
not
like
mono white.
You're 10, 11 planes.
And you want to be picking up, like, once you pick up a card like this, you really want to heavily pick stuff like Evolving Wilds, which is...
Yeah, to fix your mana.
Yeah.
But
this can be played later, though, can't it? This is all right later on. 3/5 in the air. You don't have to.
Oh,
you don't
have
to do
like,
it on
if
turn
you cast
four.
On turn six, it's still going to be huge. Yeah. Like, but Tobin Freeblade might have killed them.
You might have died. The other problem with this pack is like, if you have a pack that say has actually those two cards in it, and you pick the Archangel trying to go mono white, then the guy that you pass the pack is going to pick the Tobin Freeblade.
Definitely
going to
go white.
So good. Yeah. So then you have to fight him on the second pack. Mm.
So this is interesting. What do you pick?
I would probably take the Tobin Freeblade, man. I don't want to be just mono white. Like, I think there's you want to be like white green, white black. It's pretty hard to take even though white is the deepest color. The problem is everyone knows that white's the best color. Everyone that's like good that's drafting. So white is always pretty scarce at the table. So I think your chance of mono white is pretty.
Yeah, people are speaking about Tobin Freeblade in like hushed whispers because everyone knows how powerful that card is.
Yeah.
Archangel really commits you to. A very particular brand of deck.
I think Aaron's loving everything you're saying right now, Rob, because you're talking white. All you can do now is just add blue in there. And
white, man. Imagine how much Nyssa would hate this card. Triple white? She'd be just like, get out.
Ultra racist. Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, if this card had existed in Theros, and you just play this on turn two, and then on turn three you're like,
Enchantment.
The Deal of Heliod attack you.
God.
Here's my 3/3 of Vigilance. If it gets through, it becomes a 4/4 of Vigilance. Yeah. Turn five... 5/5,
game 10. Putting Ordeal of Healing on a vanilla 2/2 was also ridiculous. Yeah. They were like, oh, I can't do anything about that. You gain 10, cool, you get a 5/5 at the end of it, sure.
Which
no,
card?
I have no removal spells.
Okay, so here's one for you. What about
Hang on, I wanted to hear what Kim was choosing.
Oh.
What's your choice, what's
Kim?
Your pick out of those two?
You said Freeblade. I'm going to pick Archangel and go heavy white because I love white.
I think that
bitches.
Could be right as well. I think that's just a hard pick. Okay, here's one for you with white.
Yep.
Is the Tobin Freeblade versus something like Gideon's Phalanx?
Oh, I
think a better example is like Kithian's Irregulars.
No, Kithian's Irregulars is
Kithian's
just super
Irregulars
good.
Is just, yeah, Kithian's
Irregulars,
Irregulars
is like one of the best
is,
of the best
what
ones.
Is Stratosphere's better than
yeah,
Tobin
yeah.
Freeblade because I was. Sorry, I was crushing this dude on Magic Online. He's on one. He untaps and he's like, oh, Kithian's Irregulars. He has six planes out already. So he plays Kithian's Irregulars, has four planes to tap down my two biggest guys. Next turn he goes planes. Next turn he goes planes again. So even if I cast a third creature, I can't get past it. And he just hits me for four with it every turn and I died.
Yeah,
this car can literally just win by itself.
Yeah,
so
that's Irregulars is just way better than
Irregulars is crazy.
But Gideon, that's actually a choice I had to pick, and I wasn't sure.
Gideon's Valance or Freeblade? I think it's Freeblade because
I took the Freeblade.
Yeah, because it's just like so. Phalanx is put four tutus with 2/2 knights with vigilance into play.
Yeah, but it's instant speed, and all your creatures become indestructible
if you have Spellmaster,
and it costs 7. It does. We forgot to mention that.
I am likening this format to Gatecrash, which is the last truly aggressive format that I played. In Gatecrash, you needed to have 5 to 6 two-drops or you died. There were heaps and heaps of... This isn't as extreme as that, but the Primordials were in that set, and they all came down, biggest thing on the board, had some immediate effect that affected your opponent negatively. You couldn't play them because it was too fast. Even if this is a little bit slower than Gatecrash, you can't really afford to be having heaps of 7 mana spells in this format. You're going to get run over. So Topham Freeblade seems like a safer choice there.
Yeah. All right, blue. What have we got in blue?
What's the best blue common?
Isn't it the... Oh, no, that's not common.
Separatist Void Mage?
Oh, yeah, it would be Void Mage.
So Separatist Void Mage is 3 and a blue, 2/2, Human Wizard. When it comes to play, return target creature to its owner's hand.
Just bounce their dude. Yeah. It's pretty good. It's a
solid other blue notables card. Being the 3 blue-blue... owl.
No, Ringworm Owl. Ringworm
Owl. Yeah, like, Ringworm Owl is a good way to kill him, but again, doesn't do something as soon as it impacts the board.
Yeah.
Is a win condition, but Separatist Void Mage is gonna help you win the tempo.
Ringworm Owl seems solid. It's blue-blue for a 3/3 flying, and it's got prowess.
You only want sort of like one or two of those in your deck, and they go pretty late just because people only pick up one copy, and you don't really want multiples. Whereas a Void Mage is like, you would play like 4 Void Mages in your deck.
Yeah.
Right. And what are you going to put it up against? Who's the...
So, let's put it up against Jace, Vryn's Prodigy.
I'll take Jace.
That's not fair.
That's not fair. What's a realistic one?
Displacement Wave.
Displacement Wave? No, Returnal. Like
Thopter Spy
Displacement Wave, sorry, not very good. Thopter Spy Network.
Days Undoing?
No.
I would definitely take Thopter Spy Network because that's one of my favorite cards. So
Harbinger of the Tides.
Okay, so let's talk. Harbinger of the Tides.
That's
Harbinger
a solid of the card, Tides right?
is the same clean card. Pick. Yeah,
it's legitimately the same card with Flash.
That card. I think
Harbinger
is better.
Of the Tides is extremely close to Separatist Void Mage. It even does the same thing. it has blue return tap target. Return target tapped creature to its owner's hand for blue-blue, which is insane. And if you pay 2 more for it, you can cast it with Flash. So they play their Knightly Valor, bam, 4 mana, return the thing to their owner's
hand. Let's actually put it up against something which I think is...
Well, Knightly Valor, they play it pre-combat, so you can't bounce it. Because it's got to be tapped.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Right, Kian, give us a realistic comparison.
Like close, what are we doing?
Separatist Void Mage versus Soulblade Dijin.
Soulblade Djinn
is much better.
Like I'm never getting the Djinns. I hate that word. I can't say it.
The DJ-ins.
Almost every... like
The close one that we can have a good discussion about is Thopter Spy Network. So Thopter Spy Network goes in the artifact-centric decks. It costs 2 blue-blue. Whenever an artifact creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control an artifact, put a 1/1 Thopter into play. This card's really, really strong once it gets going, but also it can come down and do literally nothing if they kill your one artifact creature that you were relying on. So you need to be willing to go deep on this archetype, and if the only two cards in the pack are Void Mage and Thopter Spy Network, I'm going to take Void Mage.
So Rob,
I would have to take Thopter Spy Network just because I love that card. But also, did I say in this pod already? I did the one the other day where I started out trying to draft a red-blue artifacts deck, first picking Reclusive Artificer, the uncommon one.
First pick.
There was no amazing bombs in the pack, I'm just like, I'm going to take a pick one, go in. So I went in hard pack one and got a bunch of the artifacts, but was cut super hard on red and had to give up and start taking the black cards. So I ended up with this ridiculous schizophrenic deck that was blue, Grixis artifacts, sort of.
Ooh.
So it was falling apart. But then I got pack 3, pick 1, Thopter Spy Network. And happened to have all these good artifacts. And then black was super open at the table. So then I just picked up all black in pack 8.
Yeah.
Got a bunch of removal spells and just had an amazing, Thopter Spy Network blue-black deck that was insane, actually.
And they just waited for the prize to arrive in your lap.
Yeah, basically.
An interesting card is Disciple of the Ring. Have you guys played with or against this yet?
No.
Unsealed? How was it unsealed?
It was hilarious. He had hilariously no good spells.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. Disciple of the Ring needs to go in a very spell-centric deck as well. There's so much text on it, but to do any of the abilities, you have to pay one, exile an instant or sorcery from your graveyard. I went 3-0 with that blue-black deck that had Disciple of the Ring as one of its win conditions. You just kill their guy, bounce their guy, and then later in the game, you play Disciple, and you tap down their best thing very slowly for every turn, and you can block with this 3-4, it's a big body. One time a guy's like, yeah, cool. So I'm going to attack with this creature. And he saw the first abilities, counter target non-creature spell. He's like, I'll kill it. And now I've got the 2 mana to pay for it. He got the land that he wanted. I was like, pump it with the other abilities. He's like, oh, I forgot about that one as well. It's got so many abilities. But this one requires you to go really late game. It's not great in an aggressive deck. You need to be spell heavy to activate its ability. And 3-4 for 5 if you don't have the things in the graveyard. It's not fantastic. So charm, Void Mage. Going to be better a majority of the time because it goes in more archetypes.
What about like what about the best common versus like Jessian Thief? Yeah, that one.
Well, the uncommons in this set are extremely strong. Whirl of Rogue and Jessian Thief are both better than Separatist.
Whirl of Rogue is like one of the best uncommons in the whole set.
It's better than a lot of the rares.
Black cards? Where are we at with black cards then?
So black, best common's probably Unholy Hunger, right?
I would maybe even Reeve Soul.
Do you think Reeve Soul's better?
Because this format's so aggressive. So
You have 2 mana interaction.
Yeah, I think you really want, like, you would play like 4 Reeve Souls, but you'd only play like 2 Unholy Hunger.
That's true.
So I would always Reeve take Soul? The Reeve Soul costs I would take 2. A Reeve Soul.
Yeah, so Reeve Soul is 1 and a black destroy target creature with power 3 or less. So it just means you can kill their renowned guy. It is sorcery, so that's a bit unfortunate, but it's going to kill all those annoying. The 1
it's
3.
Power 3 or less. Power 3 or less. Power. Right.
So it's going to kill, like we said, the benchmark is Topin Freeblade and its ilk. Mm. So you're not really going to run into a lot of 4/4s, 5/5s and stuff and be like, I wish I didn't have this Reeve Soul in my hand. You want a mix of both, so you can kill anything, but this interacting with your opponent on turn 2 or 3 or 4 is paramount.
So Reeve Soul or Unholy Hunger.
That's a
Hunger
5 mana
versus
kill.
What are you going to put it up against?
Versus Graveblade Marauder. What do you think of this one?
I've never played with Graveblade Marauder. I'm not really sold on it, man. That's the one that you takes life equal to the number of creatures in your graveyard.
Yeah,
right?
So yeah. 2 and a black for a 1/4 with Death Touch. If it hits a player, they lose life equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard.
Isn't this card just good?
Like, it's like, pretty good. It's just a 1/4 with Death Touch is fine.
1/4 with Death Touch is fine, but are you taking it over Reeve Soul for one pack?
Yes.
I'm taking Reeve Soul.
If you're talking about an aggressive format where you're dying to 2/2s, I'm going to play a 1/4 with Death Touch and laugh.
But the problem is
they have heaps of ways to bounce it and remove. They can just like claustrophobe it or like Void Mage or whatever. You know what I mean? There's so many answers. Or Reeve Soul your guy.
Yeah, but like there's so many answers to everything.
Yeah, I know. But
would you take 1/4 with Death Touch with no other abilities over Reeve Soul?
Potentially.
I would never do that. Akud Cobra was fantastic in Dragons of Tarkir draft, but that was because there was very little removal, and you needed to kill like random 3/4s and 4/4s and stuff on the ground. Whereas this one's just kind of like they'll prioritize killing it because everything else in your deck is going to trade with their Token Freeblade. So if I'm playing a Reeve Soul deck against, I would prefer to have Reeve Soul in my opening hand than this
over Graveblade Marauder.
Yeah, because they can interact with this and they can't interact with Reeve Soul.
Okay. Ooh, Languish? What about Languish?
Rob,
man?
Hang on, Rob. Oh, Rob, yeah? Rob, Graveblade Marauder or Reeve Soul?
Oh, it's definitely Reeve Soul. I think Reeve Soul's great.
You sticking with Graveblade?
Yeah.
I like Graveblade Marauder because you're playing the game. I mean, it's shitty reasons to have the card.
Yeah.
But Death Touch, you know, like he's tough. He's got 4 toughness and 1 power. That's all you need is Death Touch. He's going around mopping everybody up. And if he lets you through,
then song? All you need is Death Touch.
All you need is Death Touch. I know that one.
Yeah,
it was a catchy little number. All right. Yeah, Rob, do you have another black challenge to do?
Oh, no. I was just going to say Languish is absolutely absurd.
Oh, God.
Because everything, like we've been saying, this one here.
Yeah, all creatures get -4/-4 until... All creatures get -4/-4.
So like we've been saying, everything in this format is small. So that literally just kills...
all of your cards.
Everything that you want. Everything. And normally you can... just end step on their turn, kill whatever their one big guy is, and then untap and languish their entire board. It's just absolutely brutal.
God forbid you have a 5-5 out and you languish and kill all that board and attack them for one, but you got a 5-5.
You got that spider from earlier on. Yeah, so fine.
The most miserable time I've had with Limited so far.
I don't know why I laughed at that.
Has involved a black rare known as Priest of the Blood Rite.
Right. Oh, this card is a... I do not know how to feel about this card.
Priest of the Blood Rite is 3/2 swamps for a human cleric who's a 2/2, so that seems wrong already. But when Priest of the Blood Rite enters the battlefield, put a 5/5 black demon creature... Now, demons are always going to hurt you, aren't they?
Not that the demon doesn't hurt you.
5/5 black demon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 2 life. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. That always happens when demons are around.
Had this sealed. Everyone's playing all the removal spells they possibly can and sealed. I was like, Priest of the Blood Rite. They're like, cool, claustrophobia, you're a demon. Died to my priest triggers like 5 minutes later. That's fucking great.
So he sat there, you could do nothing with him, but he still kept hurting you.
Yeah,
upkeep.
I boarded it out after I won game 2 because I went Priest of the Blood Rite and he went Separatist Void Mage, bounce your thing. And I was like, oh, come on, man. So I just boarded it out. Yeah, too many ways
to interact.
So then
you're looking
it.
For removal just to kill your own stuff.
Yeah, no, I was like, great. Kill my fucking guy.
Yeah, I've never played with it, but I played against it a bunch of times. And it's like, it's good, but there's just, I always play blue deck. So they always just like play it and just like disperse the demon. And then you just basically just kill them. You just block all the rest of the guys and kill them with their own trigger. So you can just be on defense the rest of the game.
The card is very strong. And I think it's actually really close to Reef Soul.
I think I would pick this probably over Reef Soul.
Because in games where they aren't blue or games where they don't draw, they're dispersed. You hit them for 5, you hit them for 5, they're dead.
Yeah, it's like, huge. And you can just attack with the guy every turn. And like, what are they going to do? They have to either like block it.
Have a 0 or 1 power blocker because you attack with the priest. If they block it, it dies and you've lost all the downside of it. And you've got a 5/5 with flying. So
yeah, no, 7 power off with 5 of flying for 5 mana.
Pretty darn strong.
It hurts to lose, but it hurts to lose when your own cards are killing you.
Yeah, I know. So that's hilarious.
All right, red cards. Who we got on common?
Best red
this?
Common is between Ghirriper Gearcrafter Impulse.
Ghirriper Aether Grid. Ghirriper Gearcrafter.
Yep.
All right.
It's just Sandstep Outcast from the previous set in red.
Mm.
2/2 and a mountain for a 2/1. When Ghirriper Gearcrafter enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 colorless Thopter. Rob would be happy. Token with flying onto the battlefield. All right.
It's just good value.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's just 2 bodies, 3 mana. It's fine. Like, the 2/1 on the ground is not amazing, but most of the things are 2/2 in this format early, so you can trade and then leave yourself with a 1/1 fly. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does a lot. It's not a very typical red card, making stuff with flying, but it's just strong. It's between this and Fiery Impulse. What do you guys like better?
A deck with this card as a 4 of.
Oh, right,
top. I can't remember if it was top 16 or top 24 to Star City Games Open.
No, it didn't. It had 4th. I've been playing that online. It has 4th Thopter Engineer. It doesn't play
the
this
The 1-3.
No, there was a deck that had this in it.
No,
Ghirriper Gearcrafter.
There's not. The 2 mana 2/1.
No, it's not. I'm playing that deck now. I got it off that list. Like the top 30 or whatever. Jerry Thompson posted an article on it. It's Thopter Engineer, yeah.
Yeah, the 1-3 is a little more relevant.
All right, so we've got Ghirriper Gearcrafter locked in, and Fire Impulse is the other... Well, we haven't got locked in. Well, the one we're choosing between. Fire Impulse deals 2 damage to target creature. It can deal 3 with Spell Mastery if there are 2 or more instant or sorcery cards in your graveyard. Which one do you like better? And that only costs 1.
Yeah.
So you can pay 1, hurt 3.
Yeah. Again, early interaction, very important, but... I'm not actually sure what I like better.
You might even need that 3.
I just think the removal is better.
Yeah. You might not even ever need that 3 as well, because there's so much 2 toughness stuff.
Exactly. Normally it's like early game when you don't have spell mastery, you only need 2 damage, because like all the early stuff is 2. And then by the time later game when you need 3 damage to kill like their flyers, they've got spell mastery.
And it's good so later darn cheap that you can fit it in with other stuff. They like have a combat trick, you only have 1 mana up, you can fire impulse.
So we're going with Fiery Impulse?
Yeah, I think it's probably
all right, what are we going up against?
Chandra's Ignition.
Yeah,
this is an interesting one.
I think Chandra's Ignition.
Tell us what that one does.
Very good.
Yeah.
So this is 3 red sorcery. Chandra's Ignition. Target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and each opponent. So you got a 3/3.
It's the and that
They've
hurts.
Got a board of 2/2s, but you have some 2/2s as well. Ignition is going to kill every single one of their creatures with power with toughness less than your biggest creature's power. And they're going to dome them for a bunch as well. So the upside in this card is crazy. But also, like, Knightly Valor if you do it, one of your creatures, they just bounce it as much, you just lose.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so...
But, I mean, it's... Normally, you don't even do it on your biggest guy. Like, usually, this is such a blow because... You have a board of like a bunch of 2/2s and then like a couple of 2/2s, like a 3/3 and then a 4/5 or something. And normally a lot of their guys will be, you know, 2 toughness. So normally you can just ignition one of your smaller guys so it wipes the majority of their board, leaving you with like just your hugest guys on board.
But the motivation to bounce that or kill that still strong because you're about to wipe their board.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. you don't play it into like a bunch of open mana.
Oh, but that's what you're saying. Play it on one of your weak guys. If they do it, you just lose a weak guy.
Exactly,
so who cares?
And it still gives you lots of value.
And that's worst case, but like with Knightly Valor... You just gotta jam it sometimes.
And if they've got no mana.
If they've got no mana, you've got to swing
in. So normally you want to try and wait till after they've played. Like, you wait for them, you have a big guy on board, then you force them to put a big guy on board to answer your guy. They do that, and then you fire ignition your guy afterwards when they've tapped out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that they expect to stabilize with some 4/4, and the previous turn you played, like, I don't know, your Skyraker giant or something. It's gonna deal 4 damage to everything, 4 damage to their face, and you can attack with the giant afterwards as well. It's dealing like double damage in the turn, so the upside on it's huge. But I'm not sure if it's better than just an instant speed.
2 damage,
the thing is, it just
damage.
Wins you the game.
Yeah,
like, it just wins you the
game.
It's
June Blast when it goes off.
Okay. Yeah, I've had it once, and it was just.
So
I'm
gonna put an uncommon versus Chandra's Ignition.
Yeah, yeah.
Ravaging Blaze.
I think Ravaging Blaze is bad, so
yeah.
I think Chandra's Ignition is way better.
Because that card destroyed so many people in Sealed. Like,
no, I think it's just too
slow.
It's
better in Sealed than in Draft, but look at Fiery Impulse. One mana for two damage.
No, I said Chandra's Ignition.
Oh, no, I'm saying, but compare. Fiery Impulse to
Ravaging
Blaze.
Yeah.
Fiery Impulse is just better because you get... 2 damage for 1 mana. To get 2 damage from from Ravaging Blaze, you've got to pay 4, and then the spell mastery thing is not going to come up early when you want to kill that 2/2. So later in the game it's really good, hence why it's better in Sealed. Kill some big thing Domain for 5, but Fire, I'm going to take Fiery Impulse over Ravaging Blaze. It's just you're paying too much for it.
I think Fiery Impulse works across a lot, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, you get to necessarily, Chandra's Ignition can win you the game, but Fiery Impulse is always going to be good.
Yeah.
The thing with like Chandra's Ignition as well is like you can pick up more copies of like the cheap removal later, but like you get the Chandra's Ignition, you're only going to see it one time in the draft.
Yeah,
and it's if you play it, it just usually wins the game on the spot. Mm. Like it's good for coming back from behind as well because they have a huge board. You just need one reasonable sized threat and then Ignition and it just wipes everything.
Mm.
If you're like in front as well, you can just use it on a smaller guy, clear the most of their board and just attack through for like lethal basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been, I had it once and it was just insane every time.
And the 2 red mana doesn't hurt you too much because it's a 5 cost. So by the time you
get
paid for it,
you're
going to have it.
That's, you can easily play that with just a half split.
Quick one, Abbot of Carol Keep. What do you rate it in Limited?
I think it's good. I think it's worse in Limited than Constructed.
Oh, yeah, much
worse. Just because, like,
I've
actually never had a chance to draft it.
It's like Dark Confident in Limited.
Exactly. Like, I haven't had a chance to draft it. I don't know. I think it would be
It seems
okay.
fine.
I think it would be
okay. I don't
want
to first pick it, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
I think Fiery Impulse is probably better than Abbot of Carol Keep. It's kind of like a... okay 2 drop, well 3
problem is like you just
drop.
You want to play it early because you need to put plays on the board early.
Yeah,
it's your 2 drop, so
and then you don't get the value out of it.
Exactly, that's what I mean, that's the problem. And all your spells are like, you know, 3 and 4 costs as well, so you can't really be waiting until like turn 5 and then hope you hit a 3 drop, then you actually hit a 4 drop, then you can't play anything. It's
alright, on to the green world of green. Big world of green.
The big world of green.
Welcome
the best
to the forest.
Probably Leaf Gilder.
Leaf Guild is very good. Yeah. I think that's like, I normally use that as a sign. Like if I get like a 5th pick Leaf Guild, I use that as a sign that.
Yeah, I'm worried people don't know how good Leaf Guild is. So this is Golden Hind from Journey to Nyx, except it's got a relevant creature type now. So 1 and a green for a 2/1 Elf Druid. Tap, add green to your mana pool. So you're gonna untap and be a turn ahead of your opponents, which and it's a 2/1, which is gonna be a pretty relevant body throughout the game.
Yeah, it's just great in this format. Like it gives you everything you want. So the problem with green in this format is that like a lot of the good cards obviously are as usual just like mid rangey creatures, which sometimes you can get run over before you get them out. But this guy is perfect for that. Like if you have a land light hand, you can play it early, you can ramp you into a big guy. Or if you've got a bunch of mana, you can play it early and trade off with their early stuff to buy you time to be able to resolve the rest of your hand before you die. So it's just great. Like, the mana ability is fantastic. If you play these in multiples, it's just absolutely insane as well.
Yeah.
So you play a couple, like, one of these on 2, one of these on 3, and then just untap and jam, like, a 6 drop on 2.
that's
some rap lyrics right
there. I mean,
there.
Like, it happens as well.
Listen back to that.
Oh, but calling attention to how fast this format can be, I played turn 2 Leaf Gilder. My opponent played turn 3 the Bogart Brute, the 3-2 with Menace. I don't think I played anything the next turn. Oh, no, I played a creature. Then on turn 5, I'm like, Vastwood Gorger. And he's like, Severed his Void Mage, bounce it to your hand, hit you for 3. And then I played it again the next turn, and he bounced it again with another Void Mage. And I'm taking 3 and 2 and 3 and 2 from this thing, and you can't afford to just be jamming 6 drops when they're just like hitting you for 3 over and over and over again with a 3 drop.
So Leaf Gilder versus...
Leaf Gilder versus Evolutionary Leap. Yeah, what do you pick this in draft? Do you pick it at all?
I think if you can get it early, like if you can go like pack one, pick one, Leap, I think it's great. Because like if you can pair Leap with stuff like Elvish Visionaries, which come pretty late, it's very, like Leap Visionary is amazing. Like even if you're playing like the blue-green deck and have like the Screeching Scarves and stuff, like
the ones that just give you like random dudes,
small value.
Owl, like, Void Mage. Yeah,
but you need Enders of Battlefield effect triggers to make this good, I think.
Okay, sure.
So, but I mean, Elvish Visionary is just like the ideal
Do you first
card.
Pick it over Leaf Gilder? If you, say you want to go green... You first pick Evolutionary Leap because it's you can build around it?
I think that you would, yeah. I think I would take... Ah, oh, it's so hard.
I don't know what people Leap, think about it.
No, people pick Leap. Oh, I don't even know.
At a GP day 2, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they pick it early. I don't know if it's powerful enough. You don't generally have heaps and heaps of creatures to just sacrifice to Evolutionary Leap's ability. So drafting around it...
You completely break all of their removal.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, you don't completely break their removal because it still kills. Like, if you play your huge bomb and they remove it, like, it doesn't break. It still kills your huge bomb.
Yeah, and you trade
if you had a green mana.
No, what do you mean? What we're saying is you have a 6-6. You want your 6-6 to stay alive. They kill it with Unholy Hunger. Even if you have a green mana, you're turning your 6-6 into a 2-2.
And they attack through on the board that turn. Like, that's
all
the
of their
of removal
spells become polymorph that you have to pay for.
Yeah, and you have to recast later.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly blank removal.
So we take Leaf Gilder.
I think I would take the Leap. This is really close, actually.
This is one of those interesting ones. Because all the rest that we can see on this page, Dwinen, Gaia's Revenge, Mana Gorger, Hydra, there's two that I'm not mentioning, the Great Aurora and Honored Hierarch, which are both hot garbage.
How do you compare Honored Hierarch as a rare against Leaf Gilder? I don't know. They both make mana. One comes down to turn earlier.
No, I'm gonna rage in hot garbage.
All right.
Hot garb rage.
Hold on. Isn't Honored Hierarch actually not shit in Limited?
Oh no, it's like,
don't even go there.
So shit, honestly.
All right, swinging limbs now. All right, are we even gonna, we can't do gold cards because there's no commons. Do we even do artifacts? Do we care?
What do we reckon? Okay, what do we reckon the best
uncommon
gold uncommon is?
Okay, so blue one, right? Shaman of the Pack, not very good.
Yeah.
Reclusive Artificer, okay, right?
I think it's very good. If you're in that archetype, because it's just, you just play it, kills their biggest dude.
It's
usually
just a random 2/3 with haste.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Bloodbraid Elf.
It's pretty good.
It's
like,
kind of like Bloodbraid
Elf. Yeah, I've honestly really liked that card.
Guys, I cast Bloodbraid Elf in formats where you cascade into Terminate and just kill their thing. This is like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Except it's a 2/3 with haste, so it's slightly nerfed. But this time, you just like 2/3 with haste. Bam, dome your dude for 3 because I got 3 shitty artifacts out. Attack you for 2? Oh, it's amazing.
But
it's
really, really good in that archetype as well. Because like you're playing blue-red tempo artifacts. So like you're putting in early damage. Then usually they're going to try and stabilize by just playing a big dude on board. Then you slam this guy, kill their blocker, attack with this guy and the rest of your board, put in a heap of damage. It's been very good.
I think for best...
I would say, though, that has to eliminate it from the best one. Because this one
requires
is a win more card, whereas the other cards can actually just win you.
Well, it's not just win, because it's good
when you're ahead, and it's good when you're in parity, because you're the artifact deck, but when you're behind, it's...
But it's like not even that bad when you're behind that deck, because like when you're behind, you're usually going to have like an Artificer's Vial in play, and like a couple of like a Veteran's Sidearm, or a Sigil of Vela. Like you can play this guy, kill one of their guys, use this guy as a blocker.
It requires more work. In the draft portion, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Like, okay, what do we got next? I think Possessed Scarb is very good.
Possessed Scarb is sick. I splashed for
back
it.
Back on the other page. The blue-black
one. Blue-black uncommon. It's a 3-2 for 3 blue-black. When it comes into play, get a creature, instant, or sorcery from your graveyard to your hand. If it would die, exile instead so you can't loop them. Damn it. I really wanted to.
I know Cruel Revival on that guy. Oh,
wow, yeah. Can you do it in response? No, you can't. Exile.
No, it doesn't work, yeah.
But Possess... one of the plays I did was Unholy Hunger, your guy, gain 2 life because I've been milling myself with returned centaurs and stuff. Possess Scarb, so I have a 3-2 on the board. Get back Unholy Hunger. Next time, Unholy Hunger, your other biggest guy, gain another 2 life. It's just... rolling advantage that you want in that blue-black grindy deck. So I really like Possessed Scarab. I also really like Citadel Castellan.
If you play the best one, I think.
Yeah, if you go turn two free, turn one Anointer of Champions. Let's just live the dream here. Turn two Tobruk Freeblade. Turn three Citadel Castellan. How do you lose that game? It's a 2-3 Vigilance with Renown.
It's just a bit. And it's just good all the time. Like the Castellan, so the green-white one, it's just one colorless, one white, one green. It is a 2-3 do with Vigilance and also has Renown 2, which is insane. So what normally happens is play a Skarn 3. On turn 4, you play some way to push it through, like Yaver's Force Mage or like the white 1 enchantment that taps guys when you attack.
Yep.
Some way to push it through, Anointer of Champions. And then suddenly you've got a 4-5 guy, Vigilant, on defense that can't be beaten and like attacks through everything or blocks everything in the format.
Yeah, 4-5
and it was only
3
drops. Yeah, 4 drop is like an absolute house. Yeah. So that one's great. The blue-green one, not so good. The Pestermite.
I think the blue-green archetype's just not that strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have many ways to interact earlier. 2-drops and not very powerful. Zendikar Incarnate's been really impressive.
Zendikar Incarnate's good as well. Like, it can be a little slow. I mean, it's fine. It usually just comes down as a 5-5 or 5-4 or whatever.
It's a 4-4 that can attack for 5 the turn off you play.
Yeah. It's
pretty
reasonable.
Pretty decent.
Artifacts, guys.
Oh, the best one, though. The blue white flying one. Blue white flies is like my favorite. No, like, I'm not saying it is actually the best one.
I haven't played it.
I like
it
a bit. I had two of them. I had two of them in a draft, and it was actually insane. With like 4 fairy miscreants, like 2 of those guys.
No!
It was actually good, yeah.
Oh, that's dirty.
You're still talking about Thunderclap Wyvern.
Yeah, that's the one. So it's 4 mana, so it's 2 colorless, 1 white, 1 blue for a 2-3 fly with flash, which flash is super relevant, and also gives all your flies +1/+1. So usually what happens with this is either you can attack through with like a bunch of small flyers like fairy miscreants.
Thopters,
exactly. Thopters. I normally play it in a Thopter deck,
yeah.
And then you can just flash this guy in after damage after they're blocked, or like after blocked before damage. Pump all you guys, do a bunch of extra damage, or you can wait for them to attack into you. They see your small flyers, they attack with their whole board, then you can flash in. Yeah, you flash in your 2-3 guy, it makes all your other dudes bigger, and it just crushes just one of the 2/2s on
the
attack.
I haven't been playing around this at
all. Oh, yeah, it's good. No, yeah, I know. It's really good.
It's scary.
No one does play. People just attack into my board of flyers. They're like, no attacks last turn? That's weird. Attacking into my board, I'm just like, fly, buff my guys, kill your dudes. And then, like, one of them I had, one turn, and then the next turn did the same thing, had it the second copy.
Oh,
flash it in, bam, all my guys are enormous.
3-3 flag thumpers. Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty,
pretty
scary. All right, guys, let's wrap it up with the artifacts.
Hangerback Walker, best thing in the world.
Yeah, so Hangerback Walker's obviously
How long
good.
Since an artifact has been the best thing in the world?
This is one of the strongest possible first picks in the set. It's making waves in Constructed. Because it both leaves you open to a color and is insane at any point in the game. You play it on turn 2, and then it just requires a 1 mana investment to buff it every turn. When they do finally have to deal with it, it pops into like lots of flyers. So my strategy for dealing with this card is ignore it.
So it's just great. Like, like exactly what I said. Like, it doesn't commit you in any colors, so you can always first pick it. You'll play it in any deck. If it's anywhere in your mana curve, like on turn 2 it's good, on turn 4 it's good. It's just good all the time. So turn 6, whatever, whenever you want to play it. And then it's resilient to removal, exactly. So you attack through, they want to kill it, that's fine. It bursts into like a bunch of flying threats, which are much harder to deal with. You can use it to finish them off.
Mm-hmm.
It's just insane. The other artifact that's actually very, very good, surprisingly so, is Sigil of Vela.
Oh, have you been liking it?
That's been absolutely brilliant. Like, I was watching some of the GP drafts in the GP final recently on the weekend, I forget which one.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was really highly picking that card. Like, someone picked 2 copies really, really early. David Cho, I think it was again.
Holy shit.
Picked it really early and jammed it over, like, good cards. I think it was, like, a Separatist Void Mage or that or something.
Which
card? I can't remember.
So this is Sigil of Vela. It's 2 mana for an equipment. Costs 1 to equip. Whenever a equipped creature attacks, it gets +1/+1. Whenever it attacks alone, it gets +1/+1 for each other creature that you control. So it's like it gives all your other creatures Exalted, I guess.
Yeah.
Without putting Exalted
on
a card.
So the reason it's good is in this format is a lot of it devolves into basically a bunch of... Like, either you have the games where you just run them over aggressively fast, which is fine. But then a lot of the games come down to people that have, like, you know, a lot of 2 and 3 drops on the board. So you're all sitting there with, like, your 2-3s, your, you know, your 2-2s or your 3-3s on the ground, 4-4s on the ground.
Gets a bit gummed up.
And then usually you'll have a 2-2 or a 3-3 in the air, and that's about it. So if you can just sit back on defense, equip this Sigil, attack with, like, 1 flyer, make it into a 5-5 or a 6-6, and then they have no profitable blocks. and you just hold all you guys back on defense, gum up the ground, and just attack with like a flying Sigil Bella guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very, like, surprisingly very good.
Yeah, and like, and also it's so cheap to put down, and it's only one to equip, so it means you don't even get punished that much if they kill it in response or bounce it or whatever. But I was speaking to Anthony Lee. And he says the format's very... he says it feels very granular. It feels like every little buff that you can do to your creature matters so much more than in formats previous, because you're trading off 2/2s, you're trading off 2/3s, 3/3s, that sort of thing, because we said all these creatures are small, so giving your creature even +1/+1 is a relevant buff in this format, sure, because they can't profitably block it then.
All right. Now, we did start this game comparing the best common to the rare, but sod that, we need to get in some MTG card quiz.
Yeah!
So, we're done with that. We'll be back.
MTG card quiz, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah. Nice. All right. MTG card quiz.
I'm excited. I haven't done one of these in ages.
Yeah. Penton's at the ready. And Aaron's in the house, so it could get harder. Or it could. We've been doing really, 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 really easy MTG card quizzes of late.
So I've been doing, because I don't know anything. Like, we do the flavor text ones, and I honestly, even the deck cards I own, I never ever read the flavor text. Yeah. Like, I'm just not interested. So I just get 0 out of 3 every week. I like try and just guess
maybe
off what it sounds like.
Yeah. Things change, you know?
Let's
know.
Do this, guys. All right.
MTG card quiz 6, Origins 7. Part 2. What's in the picture? We haven't done this for a while.
Sure. Of what?
What's in the picture?
I don't know.
All right. Question one. We've all stared at Gideon's phalanx for many an hour. How many dudes other than Gideon appear in the card art?
So there's him with the big whip.
And then there's a guy.
Including him?
Not including
not
him.
Including
other
Gideon.
Other than Gideon.
Yeah.
How many can you see in the art?
Yes. How many dudes other than Gideon appear in the card art? I decided
what
to
about ladies?
Dudes.
How many ladies are in the
people,
card art? That's question two. Yeah. How many children are in the artwork?
And then question three, how many transgender people? All right. Question two. Another card we've talked about earlier on. Leaf Gilder is an elf druid who first appeared in the Lorwyn set. What weapon is he holding?
I got a card mine from Kian. Leaf Gilder.
Leaf Gilder's holding a weapon?
What weapon
like a little
is he holding?
Stick? Doesn't he have a stick?
Is a stick a weapon?
I don't know.
I'm gonna go on a limb.
What's in the picture? That's what we're playing.
What's in the picture?
It's good. You covered most of these cards earlier on.
Good.
In the podcast.
What weapon is Gideon holding?
Ooh, better hide the things just in case. Something, you never know. Absent.
Number three.
Greyblade Marauder seems like a friendly Celtic warrior with death touch. How many piercings does he have in his right ear? Which is the only ear we can see, if you're wondering. So how many piercings does he have in his right ear? Graveblade Marauder.
Kian just knocks out, looks back smugly. I mean, just like, oh, yeah.
I don't have any
piercings this guy's got. Kian just put it tight.
Kian's been quiet this episode.
He has.
What's his girlfriend going to say? It's like, you weren't on that podcast at all. You lied.
Oh, he's stoic, man. He's stoic.
Yeah, that's it. Strong, silent type. That's Kian.
Exactly.
Hey, it's the rule of being in meetings. If you think you're going to say something stupid, don't say anything at all.
Just nod wisely.
Yeah. Mm. You come over like you know stuff.
Kian's girlfriend. Yes. Kian's been nodding wisely a lot.
He has.
It's been some sexy nodding, though, honestly. I'm getting drawn closer to him every time.
That was pretty sexy nodding. All right, guys. Let's do it. So we've all stared at Gideon's phalanx for many an hour. How many dudes other than Gideon appear in the card art? Rob?
Is it four dudes?
For Rob. What are you going with, Ken?
Three.
I also said three.
Shit,
three.
I actually had three that I crossed out. I'm like, is it Gideon and the three dudes?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because the card makes four dudes.
I'm not sure if Gideon's one of his phalanx.
That's what I'm trying to work out. Is it Gideon and three dudes? Or is it Gideon and his phalanx of four other
dudes?
The answer's four.
Oh,
yes! Did it! The last minute changed.
So put 4/2/2 white knight creature tokens.
No, because I was like, it's Gideon's phalanx. So the phalanx has to be the four dudes. That was my theory.
But Gideon could be in his own
phalanx.
Yeah,
he can't be a 2/2. He's fucking Gideon.
And also, like, if you have Gideon in play and then you have his phalanx and Gideon's just like there, he's like, what? Come in, boys.
Get in here.
I was so happy you talked about it before because I thought, this would be great if I get them through this one. So not bad. Hey, Rob, you're slaying this, man.
I would have been on it, man. I had that one. I played that card.
Leaf Gilder is an elf druid who first appeared in the Lorwyn set. What weapon is he holding? Kian.
Spear.
Spear,
I wrote a scythe, like one of the
scythes.
That's what I was thinking. I went for a sickle though, because I'm like, he's a little sickle, dude.
Yeah.
It's a spear.
Oh, oh man. Getting crushed.
I have no idea.
Rob one, Pian one, Aaron. Nothing.
Oh, no. Oh, man, it's you're terrible. Out of practice.
Get wrecked, Aaron.
How many piercings? Aaron. Do you reckon he's got that many piercings? Oh, okay, we'll see.
All right. Aaron, you're leading this one, right? You're coming out strong.
Yeah, same with mine.
Graveblade Marauder seems like a friendly Celtic warrior with death touch. How many piercings does he have in his right ear?
Mm. I wrote three.
Three.
Oh, I've gone three as well. Three.
I wrote four.
Wrote four, and the answer is zero.
Oh, it's a trick question.
He's a clean living dude.
Oh, my God. Right. Yeah. But in my mind, he's got piercings.
Yeah, no, just like, oh, he's
like, oh, yeah, I'm a Graveblade Marauder.
He doesn't have any tats either. Yeah. He's a Celt with no tats, no piercings, but a crap load of rings.
Does he have dreadies?
He has a shaved thing.
Yeah,
and
that's what I was
sort of
that alt look.
Can we have a look?
Yeah, you can.
The thing is, maybe he has three piercings, but he just hasn't got any jewelry in them at the moment.
Yep.
It's an ambiguous answer. He could just be like, shit, I couldn't find them this morning. I'm just going to have to go to battle without my earrings. Or he's like, these are my favorite earrings.
I
don't want to lose them.
Piercings or earrings?
Piercings, right? Yeah, but he could have the piercings.
Yeah, he could have he could.
But the art is no guarantee of not having three piercings.
There's no dimples. All right, we'll blob out of this, come back. What are we going to do? We're going to do straight into flavor text. Heavy quiz. Flavor text.
What was that weird thing that you said when we opened the booster? Smell that flavor.
Well, this one.
No, he said taste that flavor.
No, I said smell that flavor.
Taste that flavor.
No, he said it the wrong way around, man. I was thinking, like, you said the perception and, like, the thing were different. It was definitely not smell that.
Get that Ghostbusters classic when it's like, shh, does anybody smell that? Or something like that. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oops,
I like when you need to concentrate on finding a street, and so you turn your music down because that helps you find streets better.
Well, I actually do that actually as well. You're like,
weird,
oh,
right?
It's way too loud in here for me to
too
see.
Too loud for me to see.
Where is Melody Avenue? All right, the origins of flavor. I've called this the origins of flavor.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Witty.
Yeah.
That's how we roll here.
My butt.
All right. Oh, I almost forgot.
Good.
good.
I almost forgot how this segment worked and almost read stuff out. Yeah. Right.
Can we go back to being sorry for the iTunes employee that has to listen to this?
I don't think they listen to it.
Yeah,
I
heard
you say they do. Okay. Now they've invented technologies that don't have to listen to it anymore.
No way. I hope to meet Jaya Ballard someday. I think we'd get along. Chandra Nalar said that. So... I hope to meet Jaya Ballard someday. I think we'd get along.
I know this.
Chandra Nalar.
So do I.
No!
What was it? Rob, one. Kian, one. Aaron,
no.
Zippo. Right. All right, you ready for number two?
Yeah.
Let's hit it.
Waste follows want. That's it.
I know this one as well. Eat my balls.
You should, anytime you see flavor text that is short, you should really read it because I love not having to read paragraph after paragraph after paragraph.
I like remember this one, but I can't remember what it's linked to.
Waste follows want.
Waste not. Not
all right.
In this set.
And the third one, people's thoughts just come to me. Sometimes I don't know if it's them or me thinking, said somebody. Or a sorcery, or an instant, or a something. Aaron, very strong body language coming out of the
He's just so confident,
tank.
That's a thing.
I think I know all of these ones.
Oh, man.
I don't know when I've read all this flavor text, but I sure have.
There's three of them, and Rob claims to never have got a flavor text ever. So, what was the first one? I hope to meet Jaya Ballard someday. I think we'd get along by Chandra Nalar. What do you reckon?
I think it's Jaya Ballard. Like, I'm guessing it's some chick that makes artifacts. So I'm going to guess the Jadper Gearcrafter, like some dude that makes artifacts. He's trying to like hook up with some chick.
Right.
What did you guys get?
Aaron, what have you gone with?
I don't actually know what the card's called, but it's the...
No, that's it. That's the question.
That's not a thing.
The whole answer is, what's the name of the card?
It's the Mythic Goggles.
Yeah,
it's
no,
the
that
Mythic
count,
High
though.
Mana Goggles. They call it.
What are they called?
Pyromancer's Goggles or something.
Right. Is what you get?
That
what's
is
your
unfortunately
final answer?
Correct.
That is the answer.
But they're goggles. How do they mean that?
He jacked the correct answer.
Yeah, so like Jaya Ballard's and the old red planeswalker before they... scrapped all the old ones and made new ones. So she also has goggles.
Yeah, so Chandra got her goggles.
All right, Rob's on one.
She's going from MPS.
Kian's on two. Aaron's on one.
They're probably from the same world.
Kian, waste follows want. What have you gone with? I don't know the name of the card, but
yeah, it's a card. It's a card in Magic. Yeah. It's got at least one.
It's not a Yu-Gi-Oh card. It's not a Pokemon card. It's
I'll give it to you, kid.
Yeah. It's got flavor text on it that says what you said.
There is a blank space, baby, where I will write your name.
That's wrong. I think that it's Macabre Waltz.
It is Avaricious Dragon.
Rob?
I'm guessing Avaricious Dragon.
No, you can't do that.
What do you mean? He just asked what my guess is.
Did you say it?
I said Macabre Waltz, yeah. That's what it is.
You idiot. Wait until everyone's finished.
I should wait for Aaron to go.
Aaron got it. Aaron, it is correct. Avaricious Dragon. So, Rob 1, Kian 2, Aaron 2.
Oh, you got the last one.
Did I? Okay.
All right, Aaron, you're
kicking this one off. Let's ask Kian first, man. Because he doesn't know the names of any cards, so he just copies what we say.
People's thoughts just come to me. Sometimes I don't know if it's them or me thinking.
He's looking at mine now as well, so now he knows.
I know.
I literally just saw you looking at mine.
Explain this card without saying the name of the card.
I know the text of the card. I can't read his handwriting. I don't know what it's called.
Okay, you get
that's
zero.
Very honest of you.
My guess is going to be Talent of the Telepath.
My guess is also Talent of the Telepath.
And it was Jace Vryn's Prodigy.
Jace Vryn's
Prodigy? Was it really?
Yeah, it was really.
Oh my god, I'm going. Yeah. I actually was always going to put
Jace. There's no space on him. Oh my god.
Oh shit, wrecked Aaron.
Tell the telepath has similar flavor
text. Yeah, and it's a telepath. And the things like people's thoughts come to me.
We didn't get Jace Vryn's Prodigy. Whoops.
Well, we don't own them yet. They might have arrived.
So,
hey, and Rob, you managed to score nothing in flavor text.
I know, I'm shocked.
There you go.
I'm shocked.
Rob, you ended on 1, Kian 2, Aaron 2.
Devastated.
Look at that.
I'm actually going to read some flavor text for the next one.
Let's blob.
I actually like reading the flavor text. Some of it's super cheesy, but some of it's actually pretty good.
Hot garbage. Aaron Graham, hot garbage.
Thornbow Archer, this card is a 1-2-for-1. It attacks. Who cares? It's a 1-2-for-1. Cut it from your deck. It's shit.
Piss crap. Hot garbage. Honored Hierarch,
man. It's a rare. It's just trash. Unplayable everywhere. Garbage.
Hot garbage, Ken.
Alhamoroid's Archive, a 5-mana artifact that does nothing until you draw an extra card.
It's got hemorrhoids in the name. Yeah. Anyway, that was hot garbage.
Hot garbage.
He's been off in the mountains for quite some time now, the mist coming over the snow-covered mountains. There's reeds everywhere. He's wearing sandals, perhaps thongs, very little else. But he's been thinking about cards. Listener, it's time for Aaron Graham's premonitions. Aaron Graham, you got
Hello.
Some premonitions. You've been
Once
thinking.
Again, I've yeah. come down from the mountains.
Considering magic cards.
For Battle for Zendikar.
Oh, Battle for
it's
Zendikar.
A few months away, but I've seen some premonitions in the serum that
You've
I've been having my visions in. Yeah. I've scried, I've seen the future, and it's full of serum coming at my face.
From the Battle for Zendikar.
From Battle for Zendikar.
So you're going to tell us what Battle for Zendikar is going to be all about before we even know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Landfall's back.
Landfall.
Landfall. Yeah. Landfall is a great mechanic. Oh my god, guys. Landfall is back.
Ooh.
It's a great mechanic. It's not going to be as aggressive as last time, right. but they're going to bring it back because everyone loved it last time.
Yeah.
It's part of Zendikar. Yeah, I'm really excited to play with Landfall again.
Okay, can you just like hover maybe 5 or 6 inches off the ground? Because I'm straining my neck looking at you,
yep,
hovering
sure.
like
yeah,
about
yeah,
three
sorry,
or four
I'll come
feet.
Down, I'll come down.
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Right, maybe close to the mic now. What else have you got? You've seen
no fetch lands, no enemy colored fetch lands in Battle for Zendikar because they don't want people having 10 sets of fetch lands in standards. Too much shuffling. We've got enough of that in modern.
Right.
No fetch lands in Battle for Zendikar. Sorry, guys. Sorry
okay.
to break it to you.
Yeah.
And last thing,
you've seen enough. You've seen three
I've
things.
Seen one more thing about Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah.
Full art lands in
really?
Every booster pack.
Because of all the land.
Because of all the land. It's a land set. It's been 6 years since they've done it last in previous Zendikar. Fat packs are going to be flying out the door because you're going to get a 40-pack of full art lands, which is going to be worth
man.
$5 in the future.
Hey, before you go, Aaron Graham of Premonitions, will John Avon be doing any of those?
John Avon's going to do a cycle of basic lands, I hope. I mean,
what do you
I
mean?
See.
What do you mean? Yeah,
I foresee.
Yeah, exactly. It's in the vision.
Oh, man.
It's in the vision.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. That was fabulous.
No problem.
And yeah, that was Aaron Graham's Premonitions. It's Neats and Twos.
Neats and Twos.
Neats and Twos.
Mm.
All right, maybe got some news here. Hang on, let me just pull this up. It's new. It's an article. It's by. It's from Mark Rosewater.
Oh yeah.
He's been doing a bit of premonitions himself, but I think he's got some inside knowledge.
Yeah. Maybe he works at Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's blogged something about Battle for Zendikar already.
I think I know this. This is interesting.
He's saying, starting with the Battle for Zendikar pre-release, we will no longer be using the seeded packs. You will get 6 Battle for Zendikar boosters along with a stamp preview card that can be any rare or mythic rare from the set.
That's interesting.
This change was made because of the feedback they received. Yep, so they're listening cool. to customers.
Correct.
I think it's a really good change.
Good change.
Yeah, good change.
Although you get less cards now.
Yeah, I guess.
So you pay your $45, you only get 6 boosters.
You get one less, and you get less chance of opening like whatever the planeswalker or the big mythic from your color.
But it's much better for like the competitive. If you're trying not like super competitive, but it's much better at evening out the format. Like sometimes before when they had preset ones, like before it was randomized, it was always just a better one. So if you wanted to win
the rare,
if you wanted to win, you just had to pick a specific color.
Yeah,
before.
Which is something that you don't want.
Yeah, which is horrible.
And also, say you open a red pack, but then you open your 6 other boosters and they don't have any red cards in them, you are fucked.
Yeah,
because everyone else is on this other level where they've got this cool synergistic thing with heaps of white cards to choose from, and you had to make some blue-black deck and throw all these red cards away.
And if you're a new player and everyone's fighting over the red pack, and you just go, "I don't know what to get. Oh, I've got this." Red, I've got this green pack, I already feel like I've lost.
And pre-releases are when you get the most new players, so this is a good change.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. All right, on the Twitter world, which is the twos or the neats?
Both.
Yeah. All right. Charles Shearer, I think that's how it says, or Shearer. I don't know where he's from. We don't know.
England player Alan Shearer.
That's who he is, but this guy's name's Charles. He tweeted us a picture of, I'll show you, Aaron. There's a hand that he drew.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, he's the first person to ever send us a photo of his actual seven land.
He literally drew seven basic islands.
Maybe that should be the new cover photo for seven land hand.
That's a good one. Yeah, seven basic islands as well is the best way to be.
Yeah,
the
it's
best
good.
Seven land hand.
It's even the right color for seven land hand. He says, "What's this? A seven land hand."
That's so good. Awesome. Yeah.
I'll have to maybe. Charles, if you're listening, I'll send you a tweet back, and you send us your address.
I wonder if the deck Magic is just Nerd Badge 60 studio. Islands.
It's Jewels of the Planeswalkers. So
it can't be.
Yeah, right, okay. So you legit got a seven land island opener.
Is that Jewels of the Planeswalkers there?
Yeah, this is Jewels. They've just released the new edition, which is going to be updated instead of released every year, and apparently it's looking pretty schmick.
Because send that through, which was on the 15th of July.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I wasn't sure it was out.
I don't think it was out then.
He might be from a different country.
It might have been released in America first.
Yeah,
as well.
We'd be tipped off that.
Different platforms has been rolled out, but I don't know where it is.
It's not likely that Australia would be behind other countries, though, in release dates. Is it?
What?
No. Okay, moving right along. So right in. Like, is anything on the Facebook that we want to talk about?
Bree sent us a message of
love.
Posted a picture of
love for Kian.
Did you already talk about the blue black control deck that went through a washing machine?
No, we didn't talk about that.
It was an old school blue black deck that was in someone's pocket or something, and she posted a picture of it mangled after being through someone's washing machine.
Soggy. So. Yeah, feel
pretty,
the pain.
Pretty rough.
Was there anything
slightly
expensive?
That was like clones and like old school blue black control, like maybe some counter spells and stuff.
So she could rebuild it for under a dollar. She could rebuild it for under a dollar.
Like with a sharpie. Colouring all the white mangled bits. Yeah, sure.
You sell it as heavily played, it'd be fine.
Alright, so don't forget to tune into the board game show for discounts and deals on games we review in a fortnight's time. I'm not sure what we're doing, but I think it might be Eldritch Horror. That's just because I want to play Eldritch Horror for a bit. And we did it a couple of years ago on the Lovecraft show, but for about 10 minutes. But we'll play it thoroughly this time with a board games team. In the meantime, stock up on Timeline, currently at Good Games Cannington. I think Rockingham are running it as well. Yeah. You can use the password that we gave to you in the last show, which was episode 45, the mini game special. We're going to save yourself some bucks. All right. Anyone else got any neats and twos? No. Want to hang out there? No, Keen's dozing off. His mind's a million miles away. Do you go out and brush your hair?
He's got to look good for the recording.
He's gone out and spruced up.
Keen has literally said the least that he's ever said in the podcast. I'm sorry, girlfriend. of Kian's.
Yeah. it's probably her fault. But like, I don't want to say anything stupid. Yeah. Unlucky. Yeah. Unlucky.
All right. We'll do this and then we'll be back with the outro.
So something that was close to saying for Hot Garbage was how much I dislike playing against Hangerback Walker, because it just feels like it spirals out of control for you. And then it explodes into Thopters if you ever want to kill it. So what you do is you just ignore it, either attack around it. They hit you with a 3-3. Cool. All right, you hit me with a 3-3. I'm never going to block it ever, and I'm going to save my cool suppression bonds or something to put on it. And then it never explodes into Thopters. You never have to worry about it, ever. It's worked out okay for me so far.
Disperse, Void Mage Separatist. Oh, it feels so good. It feels
there's
so many good.
Different ways to deal with it. Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Aggro. Oh, fuck, thanks for coming in, Aaron. It was nice to hear from you.
Very nice to see you.
Rob?
Yeah, it's been good, man. It was my origin for my love of Aaron's pan flute playing. Actually, it was pretty impressive.
I thought you were going for your love of Aaron's pants then for
a
minute.
That's a bit of both. They're not exclusive.
Not exclusive. Also, where he keeps his pan flute. And Kian. Thanks for opening the show with your...
you should just stay silent.
Thanks for being here, mate.
Thanks for being here.
I appreciated listening to your advice.
We appreciated your moral support.
Yeah. More from you next time. We want MVP from you next time.
Actually,
coming strong.
This is the origin of me calling the Planeswalker in the pack.
Oh, you're going to do it every time?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Hey, soul sister.
Good night, everybody.